can hear what you're thinking. All your doubts and fear. And if you look in my eyes in time, you'll find the reason I'm here. And in time, all things shall pass away. In time, you may come back someday. Live once more, or die once more. But in time, your time will be no more.
Every man's heart one day beats its final beat. His lungs breathe their final breath. And if what that man did in his life makes the blood pulse through the body of others, it makes them bleed deeper in something than larger than life, then his essence, his spirit, will be immortalized. I am Ultimate Warrior. You are the Ultimate Warrior fans. And the spirit of Ultimate Warrior will run forever.
Well, what a week this turned out to be. Started out on a really happy note. Didn't end that way. This is episode 323 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, April 13th, 2014. I am the Solid Monster. You can listen to the show each and every week on thesolidmonster.com, Stitcher Radio, or in iTunes. Thank you to everybody who has been streaming the show in Stitcher, by the way. We have cracked the top 10 on the sports chart, so please keep streaming us there. We have a free Android app in the Google Play Store if you want to download the official Sound Off app for your Android device. And I'm very happy to announce there is now an unofficial Sound Off app for Windows 8.1. If you have Windows 8 for your PC or tablet, not phones, it's not available for phones yet. There's a version for Windows Phone slated for later this year. Free to install, features links to not only all the most recent podcasts, but the most recent videos on our YouTube channel. All in one convenient app. I got to give a big thank you to Juan Cabrera, one of our listeners, for putting that whole thing together. Just search Solid Monster and it should come right up. And thank you to everybody who has supported the show. We had a big week this past week. Two Sound Off episodes. In case you missed either one, there were two Sound Offs recorded on Bourbon Street in New Orleans over WrestleMania weekend. The pre-show, of course, where myself and Noah Mark did predictions for the big pay-per-view. And we did a WrestleMania 30 post-show. Immediately after the event was over, we had a whole roundtable. Myself, Noah Mark, Brian Blade, webmaster Mike from SE Scoops for the first time. We had him on the show as well. Was a lot of fun. We had a little furry guest, an unwelcome visitor, who didn't stick around for very long. But if you missed any of that stuff, just go back and listen to it. I think you'll enjoy it. So I'm not going to cover WrestleMania too much on the show, go too in-depth, but I do have some more thoughts on WrestleMania now that a week has gone by, and I've had the chance to go back and watch it on the network, to watch the TV version. I have some interesting thoughts on WrestleMania, so we'll get to that in a little bit. Let me just get some PayPal shout-outs out of the way first, people who have donated to the show. Big thank you to Chris Percocet Payne, Juggernaut Jesse Rusalaxo, I hope I pronounced that right, Adam Titanium Tongue Topless, Halen Last Laugh Lee, Mark the Almighty Adams, Eitan the Executioner Zimmet, and Joe Shut Your Face Schaefer. Big thank you to all the people who have donated to the Sound Off. Again, if you donate $10 or more, you get a nickname, but you can donate whatever you want in the donation box on thesolidmonster.com. The big news of the week, obviously, is not anything that happened on Raw or anything like that, although there was a lot of big stuff that happened. The big story was the death of the Ultimate Warrior at 54 years of age, real name Warrior, being characterized as due to a catastrophic medical condition. That's what the authority said. There's no indication of what that means. Could speculate on what that means, but we don't know yet. I know they did an autopsy on Thursday, did not reveal any obvious cause of death, so they're doing additional tests. We probably won't know for another 2 or 3 weeks exactly what killed him, but I'm sure once that news leaks, TMZ, I'm sure will be all over it. So we'll find out fairly shortly, I think, what the deal is with Warrior. What happened is, There were people who, I guess, witnessed what went down. He had flown back home to Arizona. And I think they had, him and his family, they had two homes. One in Arizona. He's lived in Arizona for as long as I can remember. But I think they also had a house in Santa Fe, New Mexico. I don't know if they were staying in Arizona full-time or New Mexico full-time, but they were back in Arizona. They were at a hotel, and he and his wife were walking to their car when, according to witnesses, he clutched his chest, collapsed on the ground, and then died en route to the hospital. TMZ reports that WWE has sent two high-level employees, executives, to Warrior's home in Arizona to assist the family, doing things like grocery shopping and things of that nature, so that Warrior's wife Dana can spend some time with their two young daughters, just to help ease the burden, I guess. This is a really shitty time for them, obviously, and WWE trying to do what they can, I guess, to make it a little bit easier on them. They have announced that Raw this coming Monday will pay tribute to the Ultimate Warrior in some form. I don't know if it's a Warrior tribute show, I would imagine it's not going to be wall-to-wall Warrior coverage and matches. It's probably be something, I would guess, where every time they go to commercial, they show a wrestler talking about the Warrior and air some clips from his matches and segments and promos over the years. That would be my guess. They're also working on a special called Warrior, the Ultimate Legend, that will air this Wednesday on the WWE Network. It may be a multiple-part series, so this may just be part one airing this Wednesday, maybe with another part airing next week. Again, they haven't specified. They had a camera crew, WWE did, following Warrior and his family all over the place WrestleMania weekend. They were filming them before the Hall of Fame, at the Hall of Fame, at WrestleMania, probably the next night as well at Raw, would be my guess. I don't know how much, if any, of that footage will be in that special. I'd have to think that there would be footage from what they were shooting in that network special, but there's no telling how much of that will ever see the light of day. It's just a really shitty story all around. I mean, it was a real kick to the gut, and I think what was more shocking about it than anything else was the timing of it. And when you pay attention, and I played some of the audio at the beginning of the show in the intro, but when you pay attention to the words that he was speaking in his promo on Raw Monday night, you know, where he says, "No WWE talent becomes a legend on their own. Every man's heart one day beats its final beat. His lungs breathe a final breath." Really eerie stuff. And the timing of everything, where he was on the outs with the company for so long. I don't want to say he was in exile. If anything, he was in self-imposed exile. Because I'm sure at any point, if he wanted to come back and make some money and do something with the company, there could have been a peace brokered between he and Vince McMahon. Vince has done the same thing with Hogan and a whole bunch of other people. Although he and the Warrior have had a lot of legal squabbles over the years, and then that DVD that came out 10 years ago, if you listen to his Hall of Fame speech, clearly that DVD still stuck in his craw to this day. They have a new DVD they just released. I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it's a lot more complimentary, and they have clips from the Warrior himself. The first one was just a total hit piece. Not to say that everything in that DVD was not true. I have the DVD, and there was a lot of truth to it, but clearly it was done as a hit piece on the Warrior. I don't think there's any doubt about that, and that still bothered him a lot. But he was essentially in exile for, I think, 18 years. He did some wrestling stuff. He had started to do some convention stuff. He had that match with Orlando Jordan, I think, in Spain back in 2008. You can find it on YouTube. He did not look very good at all in that clip. I don't think anybody was expecting Warrior to come back and wrestle a match. I think it was pretty obvious he wasn't going to be able to do that. I didn't notice it so much at the Hall of Fame. I was in the arena, and they didn't really show shots of him up on the screen. They just had the Hall of Fame logo. You had to look up, and I mean, he looked fine. It was Raw the next night that I really noticed how badly he was moving around. It almost looked like, I don't know if he had a knee replaced at some point. It looked like he had some problems with his knees, because he was walking very awkwardly. It was almost like he was doing the Khali walk. Like, watch the way the Great Khali walks to the ring, and look at the way the Warrior was walking down that ramp on Monday night. He didn't look good in that respect, but otherwise, I don't think anybody would have ever predicted that this guy was on the verge of a heart attack. You know, when he comes in the ring and he does that heavy breathing, I just chalk that up to him doing the Ultimate Warrior shtick. When the Warrior used to come out back in the day, he would also do that heavy breathing, and I figured, okay, he's getting into Ultimate Warrior mode. So it didn't really cross my mind that there may be something wrong in that respect. Maybe people watching on TV felt differently. But for him to come back after so many years away and make peace with Vince McMahon and make peace seemingly with Hulk Hogan, there was a photo that Hogan posted on Twitter from backstage with him and Warrior and Pat Patterson all together smiling. And Jake Roberts said that he and Warrior had buried a hatchet because there had been some back and forth between the two of them in recent weeks on Twitter, and so they buried that hatchet. And it just looked like he was able to put a lot of that angst with a lot of people to bed. Maybe not with Ted DiBiase. If you watch the Hall of Fame, that much was obvious, and I know DiBiase doesn't really care for him very much. But after all that stuff, and for him to come back and to be on Raw for the first time since 1996, cutting an Ultimate Warrior promo, and he had just signed a contract, he even said, to be a brand ambassador for the company, and then the very next day he drops dead. And it's just one of those things you can't explain. I mean, the timing is just, it's shitty in some ways, but in other ways, you're almost happy for the guy. You're almost happy that he was able to come back one last time before this happened, and to put a lot of that bad blood to bed with a lot of people, and to have that one last chance to go out there and make an appearance and be honored and cut an old school Ultimate Warrior promo and do all the things that he did. It was cool. It was cool that he had the chance to do that before it all came to an end. And when I think of the Ultimate Warrior, you know, I think back to when I was a kid, and I'm sure a lot of you guys are the same way. The biggest match of my childhood was Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania 6. It's still to this day one of my favorite WrestleMania matches. I was a big Hulkamaniac as a kid. I wasn't really a Warrior fan so much, which is a little odd because I still have somewhere buried in my closet the old Ultimate Warrior wrestling buddy. And my brother, who was more of a Warrior fan than a Hogan fan, has the Hulk Hogan one. So I don't know why that is, but we do. I have the Warrior one, he has the Hogan one, and we used to beat the crap out of each other with him and all that kind of stuff. And I was rooting for Hogan in that match at Sky Dome, and I don't remember actually sitting there watching the match live. I know I did, but I just remember being so stunned that Hulk Hogan actually lost a match at WrestleMania, which at that time was just unheard of. I don't count, you know, the match with Andre at 4 where they both got disqualified. And it was a big deal. I mean, that match was a huge deal to a young wrestling fan back then. And only years later, you know, you read old newsletters from back then, and even like on the wrestling news groups. If you really dig back, if you do like Google searches and stuff, you'll find like internet posts from many, many years ago, people talking about that match and what was going on back then. And people were stunned by how good the match was. And I watched the match back now, and it, you know, in a lot of ways, it was a great match. It wasn't a great wrestling match, but to see those two guys go in there and have the kind of match they had was pretty incredible. Because by all rights, the match should not have been as good as it was, but I enjoyed it a lot as a kid. I enjoy it a lot when I watch it back now. And so the Warrior, to me, he had a lot of good matches in his career. People dump on him a lot because, oh, he came down, he got blown up, he could only do a few moves. Warrior was not Bret Hart. He was not Shawn Michaels. He was not supposed to be. He was this big, jacked up, muscled up dude who came out wearing face paint and tassels, came out like a maniac. One of the most hilarious things I've ever seen. WWE used to have a show here in New York that aired on the MSG network where they would air old MSG house shows. Now they do it on the network, I guess. And I wish I remembered the date of the show, but it was a Madison Square Garden house show where the Ultimate Warrior, I want to say, teamed up with LOD against all three members of Demolition. I think that was the match. This would have been probably from 90 or 91. Warrior comes down to the ring like a bat out of hell, and there's some poor ring technician ringside. As the Warrior starts to circle the ring, he just steamrolls over this guy. And it's the funniest thing, because I used to go back and rewind it and fast forward it and rewind it, because the guy's hair, like when the Warrior runs into him, he goes one way, his hair goes in the opposite direction. I mean, he just got barreled over. It was the funniest thing. I don't know if he got hurt or not, but he was just a maniac, you know? He would come out full of energy. He would run around like a crazy man. And for all the wrestlers on that DVD and other people who have mocked the Warrior and made fun of him and said, oh, his matches sucked and this and that, boy, you know, you get an awful lot of wrestlers who love to imitate the Ultimate Warrior in some ways. And Batista has talked fondly about him. And Batista even said he had a chance to finally tell him this weekend that he basically stole his rope shake from the Warrior. There's a lot of wrestlers who were influenced by the Warrior and Hogan and guys like that when they were kids. Don't let them fool you when they if they say otherwise. And my favorite Warrior matches, because I was thinking to myself, you know, what would I classify as my top three favorite Ultimate Warrior matches? And it would have to be, and I'm not putting them in order, but it would have to be the rematch with Rick Rude at SummerSlam 89. That year, Rude beat him for the Intercontinental belt at WrestleMania. They had a rematch. The rematch was a lot better than their WrestleMania match. It was a really, really good match. And Rick Rude had a lot to do with that. Rude was awesome. Rude was Warrior's... I would say that Rick Rude was probably Warrior's best opponent. I know some people might say Savage. It's kind of neck and neck between the two of them. But I would go with Rude. The WrestleMania 7 match with Savage, obviously a great match. The post-match was great, too. Everything about that I loved. And the WrestleMania 6 match with Hogan. I think those are my three favorite Warrior matches. I think those two WrestleMania matches are probably the two most iconic matches of his career. I think a lot of people would like to just forget about the rematch with Hogan in WCW and just pretend that it never happened because it was that awful. And, you know, he said in his Hall of Fame speech, as he did in other interviews before, that his father walked out on him and his family when he was 12 years old and never looked back. And you could tell that bothered him because he would mention it. And just when he would mention it, You could tell that he was annoyed by that. He would say, never paying any attention to any kind of financial support or anything like that. And his daughters are right around that same age now. And now they have no father. And that's the part that really, really sucks. You know, he brought them out with him on stage at the Hall of Fame, and it's just a really shitty situation. And talking about him here on the Sound Off brings mixed emotions to me. So I apologize if this kind of goes all over the place, but that's probably the most legit way for me to do this since this is how I really feel. You know, it's one thing for me to have all these wonderful things to say about Warrior and all the memories from when I was a kid and how it's another part of my childhood gone. You know, it was all about Hulk Hogan, Macho Man, and the Ultimate Warrior when I was a kid. Those were the three guys. And now, two-thirds of that equation are gone. But I would be a hypocrite if I didn't bring up the other side of the man and some of the outrageous things that he has said about other people a lot of times during tough times in their lives. You know, this is a man who, when Heath Ledger died, suggested that it was a good thing he died because he was a negative influence on his young daughter. And talking about the queer movie he did, is what I think he called it, Brokeback Mountain. He said the guy's kid was better off with her father being dead because he used drugs. Bobby Heenan. I've made no secret of the fact that Bobby Heenan is the best manager in wrestling history. He's one of my all-time favorites. It was really cool for me to have a chance to meet him 2 years ago in Miami. Love Bobby Heenan. Bobby Heenan has been through a lot of shit in his life. In the last 10, 15 years, he has been to hell and back with throat cancer. And he's beaten throat cancer. He has beaten it, but at a price. Anybody who sees Bobby Heenan now can tell the price that guy has paid. And the Warrior had, you know, when it comes to Bobby Heenan, I understand he's probably very upset about comments that Heenan made on that DVD many years ago. And I think that Heenan probably means it, because you get the impression from other interviews that he's done that Bobby Heenan just did not like the Ultimate Warrior. He worked with him a lot, and I think on the DVD he said he would get hurt a lot. Heenan would when he would work with Warrior. He was clumsy, he was reckless, and all this other kind of stuff. That's how he really felt, and there probably was a lot of truth to that. So I understand Warrior maybe doesn't like Bobby Heenan, doesn't look at him as being his most favorite person in the world, but the guy at the time is going through cancer. And he calls him a two-faced bag of shit. He says he's dying and diseased on the inside. And I found the quote. He said, imagine what it will be like lying there taking in your last breaths, knowing you hoard yourself out your entire life. Not even Vince could come up with a better finish than this. Karma is just a beautiful thing to behold. That's what he said about Bobby Heenan when Heenan was basically dying of cancer. Okay, he referred to Droz, Darren Drozdov, as the cripple. That's what he called him, the cripple. And I remember JBL go, I think it was on Bite This when they still had the audio show on WWE.com. And you know, now, of course, JBL has all these wonderful things to say about the Ultimate Warrior, but I remember JBL going on Bite This and tearing the Warrior a new one. I mean, he just laced into the Ultimate Warrior after he heard that. Because Droz was well-liked by pretty much everybody at that time, and it was a horrible thing that happened to him when he got paralyzed, and Warrior goes around calling him a cripple. The stuff he said after Hurricane Katrina, and about the city of New Orleans not being a good place, and being a cesspool, and all the people there being fat and whatnot, which is quite the double standard when you consider that he accepted an invitation into the Hall of Fame in New Orleans. In fact, his final three appearances all took place in the very city he condemned. I've mentioned his appearance at Hofstra University many years ago. When I was still in college, I met him afterwards. It was, I guess the Young Republicans brought him in to do a speech, and he did a Q&A session afterwards that got very testy. Students came up and were asking him questions, and people brought up steroids, and not in any sort of disrespectful way. I mean, there was nobody who I think was out of line in their questioning, but boy, some of these questions just set the guy off. Warrior was threatening to put students through tables and beat them up and all this kind of wacky stuff. And I mean, at the end of it, I went up to him and he was as nice as could be. Got a photo with him, shook his hand. You know, he was nice enough to me, even if he wasn't always to others. And it was a thrill for me because, again, one half of the WrestleMania 6 main event that I grew up on as a kid, you know, is standing right here and I had a chance to meet him. So it was a cool moment. But, you know, you can't ignore some of the other things about his life. I get that there's a time and a place for it, but I can't sit here and talk about this guy's life in glowing terms without mentioning some of this other shit that does bother me. Because he said a lot of really nasty shit about a lot of people over the years. Stuff that was really out of line. And that's just the kind of person he was. And I believe that he meant every word of it. He meant every single word of it. He wore his heart on his sleeve. I've never seen a more intense guy than him. You go and see some of the videos that he used to put YouTube videos out on his own channel that are still out there if you want to go find him. His workouts. I mean, the guy was the most intense person I've ever seen in my life. That's who he was. So I can appreciate him for that, but you got to take the good with the bad. Which brings me to Nancy Grace, or as I call her, Nancy Disgrace. I'm not going to call her Nancy Grace anymore because Disgrace is a more appropriate name for her. And I started calling her that many years ago after the Benoit stuff, which I'll talk about in a second. She did a report. It was a Tuesday night or Wednesday. It would have been Wednesday night, I guess. It was very shortly after the news broke that he had died. And she, of course, had to jump right on top of it, another dead wrestler. So she does a report on her show, which is on HLN, basically a network, and a show that really is watched by almost no one. And I didn't watch it. I didn't want to watch it. She is a vile, repulsive woman. I have no interest in watching her whatsoever. And I had no plans on doing it until people started tweeting me and sending me messages saying, oh my God, she said Owen Hart, you know, died of steroids. And I thought to myself, what? That's not possible. She couldn't have said that. And in her defense, she did not actually say that. But when people started mentioning Owen Hart and stuff like that, I said, okay, I got to watch this now. So I find the segment on YouTube. It's like an 8-minute clip. I don't even know if it was the complete segment. If it wasn't, I'm sure it was most of it. And right off the bat, rumors of steroids and illegal drug use swirling. She stuck to this script multiple times during this 8-minute segment. No less than 3 or 4 times, she said the exact same words. Rumors of steroids and illegal drug use are swirling. The guy's been dead for, what, a day? I don't see rumors of illegal drug use and steroids swirling. I admit, the first thought that popped in my head when I heard the Warrior drop dead was, it was the years of steroids. Clearly the guy was jacked to the gills for most of his career, way more so than a lot of other wrestlers were, and it would be a fair assumption to make that after all those years of doing all the shit that I'm sure he and everybody else did, it caught up with him, and we're going to find out that he had an enlarged heart, or something to that effect, because we've heard this so many times before. How many wrestlers have dropped dead or had heart attacks in their 40s, in their 50s, and we hear the same thing over and over again? That was just the first thought that popped in my head. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we'll find out it was a complete freak thing. It was a stroke. Who knows? But sure, that was the first thought that came in my head. You can make that assumption by looking at an old photo of the Ultimate Warrior. I'm sure the average person would look at that and not be surprised that this guy dropped dead at a young age. But to say that rumors of illegal drug use are swirling, I don't see rumors swirling about anything. The only thing that's swirling is my vomit at the bottom of the tidy bowl by having to sit here and listen to this woman ramble on and on. And it brought me back to all those years ago when I used to watch that show when they would have all the wrestlers on to talk about the Benoit stuff, from Mark Merrow to Steve Blackman to Fit Finlay and everybody else, and it would drive me up a fucking wall because this woman clearly doesn't have a fucking clue what she's talking about. Not a clue! To illustrate how greatly in tune with the wrestling industry this woman is. Apparently, according to this report, the Warrior was a top WWE superstar at the time of his death. Did you know that? Did you know that he was a top star in the company when he passed away? I didn't know that. At one point, she even referred to him as Ultimate, as though that was his first name. And what's worse is this list of wrestlers. So on the screen, they have a list of wrestlers who died young, presumably from steroid or drug abuse. Okay, that's the presumption. Owen Hart is on this list. How did Owen Hart die? He fell from the ceiling in an accident. I have never heard Owen Hart's name not one time linked to drugs, to steroids. I mean, I can't say he never did them. I don't know. But I've never heard his name linked to any of that kind of stuff. He fell in a stunt and he died in the ring. He's on the list. Mark Curtis, whose name I recognized. Okay? Brian Hildebrand, that was his real name. But he was referee Mark Curtis in WCW, and he worked other places as well. He died from stomach and bowel cancer many years ago, and they used to have the tribute shows in his honor after he passed away. Nothing to do with steroids or drugs, or anything nefarious or evil or suspect or anything like that. He's on the list. Apparently, Joey Morella was on the list as well. I didn't catch his name on there. But apparently he was on that list, and that was also an accident. He fell asleep at the wheel of his car on the New Jersey Turnpike after a long TV taping. I think actually Harvey Whippleman was in the passenger seat, but he was buckled in, and so that saved his life. But it was a freak accident. He fell asleep at the wheel of his car, and he died. Nothing to do with drugs, nothing to do with steroids that we know of. So what it looks to me is her staff lifted a list from the website about.com, as I did some searching, and there's a list on there very, very similar to the one that they put on TV. There may have been some minor differences, but for the most part, it looks like somebody who works on her show, maybe an intern or something, went on Google, they found this list of young wrestlers who died young, or wrestling people who died young, and they said, okay, let's put this on TV, paying no attention to some of the names on the list. And everybody, all the wrestlers, everybody who has seen this is just furious about it. And they all say the same thing, that Nancy Grace, because it's her show. I don't care who put the list on TV, it's your fucking show. Your name is on the show. And so she should own up to it, she should apologize to their families. It was a really shitty thing for them to do, to include those people, kind of lump them in that same category. And I agree, 100%. DDP was on the show. She was his guest, his big wrestling guest on the show. And I'm watching this and I'm going, why would DDP even agree to go on this woman's show? And when the segment was over, he posted a statement on his Facebook page. It said, I went on Nancy Grace last night expecting to discuss Warrior the Man. Had I known the only topic discussed would be steroids, I would not have participated. At the time, I was also unaware of the list that was shown to the viewing audience. To imply that all of the wrestlers on that list died from steroids was wrong, and for that they owe the families an apology. Again, my only intention was to discuss Warrior the Man and share some stories about how dedicated he was to the wrestling business. I am saddened that was not what happened, and my thoughts remain with his family. So, it was an ambush. I'm sure he feels really bad about it, but still, look, he's a wrestler. I'm not. Even I know that if Nancy Grace comes calling, they want a wrestler on their show for a story like this. They're not having you on, dude, to talk about the guy's life. They don't give a fuck about the guy's life. Shouldn't that be obvious? And I see people are circulating this petition on like MoveOn.org and other websites, and there's like 15,000, 20,000 signatures trying to get Nancy Grace removed from the air. You're wasting your time, people. I'm not promoting a petition. I'm not doing anything like that because it serves no purpose. Petitions, these kind of petitions on the internet, the only thing they do is they get these people to laugh and point and mock you. They don't accomplish anything. However, if you want to try to make an impact of some kind, if it really does bother you and you want to get them to apologize, you're not going to get her kicked off the air. But if you want to try to make some kind of difference, if you want to make your voices heard, don't circulate a petition. The easiest way, there's two things you could do. First of all, you can tweet her. You can tweet, it's the official Twitter account for the show. I'm sure a lot of people have already done this, but if you want to, send them a message and let them know how you feel. You can send a tweet to @NancyGraceHLN. That's the Twitter handle. But I'll do you one better. If you want to really make it very clear how you feel about this in a respectful, polite way, okay, I'm not saying to call these people up and start cursing them on the phone, but if you want to make your voice heard, one of the best things you can do is call the show directly. And the phone number to do that is 404-827-1500. That is the direct line, not for her, but that's the direct line for her show at the network. 404-827-1500. Let them know how you feel. Let them know that it's not right, and let them know that they owe people an apology for what they did, because it was a really scumbag thing for them to do. Enough with the petitions and all this other stuff. It's not going to do anything. You got to contact them directly and let them know how you feel. Tweet them or call them. That's the easiest way. But what I really wish would happen here, and I feel for DDP, he fell right into the trap. A lot of other people have done that before. I wish all wrestlers would agree not to appear on this woman's show. It doesn't have to be a formal thing where every wrestler comes together. It can be a very informal understanding that if Nancy Grace's show or any of those HLN shows come calling, let the answering machine pick it up. Let it go to voicemail. Or just pick up and say no. Get lost and hang up. Okay, look at Barry Bonds in Major League Baseball. Barry Bonds was probably the greatest hitter of this generation, maybe of any generation, and he was breaking all kinds of records and the home run record and everything that guy did. And rumors of steroid use with him were swirling. You talk about swirling. Those rumors with Barry Bonds were there for years and years and years, and everything all came unraveled, and a lot of those guys paid a very heavy price for doing steroids or being perceived to have done steroids. The Mitchell report came out. There was a lot of stuff that went down in baseball without me getting into all that stuff. But Barry Bonds was still, in a lot of ways, at the peak of his career. He was still putting up monster numbers, but he was also the most hated man in baseball at that time. This goes back many years ago when everything kind of bubbled up to the surface. And I think it was in 2007 or 2008, you know, he was on the San Francisco Giants, and the Giants confirmed they were not going to bring him back for the following season. And so he filed for free agency, and his agent was all confident, you know, there's going to be a ton of interest from every major league team. Who wouldn't want to have Barry Bonds on their team? This guy is the greatest player of all time. And much to his chagrin, nobody was interested in Barry Bonds. Nobody signed Barry Bonds. Nobody wanted to have anything to do with him. The guy was essentially, unofficially, blackballed from baseball. And it's because, and I have no doubt in my mind, that all the owners for all 30 teams had an understanding that we're not going to sign this guy. That doesn't mean that they all hopped on a conference call and conspired and specifically said, we are not going to sign this guy. There was an understanding there. This guy is untouchable. We don't want to have anything to do with him. And I wish that the wrestlers would have that same kind of understanding when it came to shows like this. They don't have to come together. They just have to be smart enough to realize that I know it's probably very tempting. You go on television, you get your face on TV, and you get yourself out there. Nothing good can come from going on this woman's show. Nothing good can come from having anything to do with this creature. So just leave the creature alone and let them crawl away. That's the best thing that you could do. Now, Bonds, I think Bonds actually is now, I think the Giants actually just brought him in as an instructor for spring training this year. That would be the first thing I think Barry Bonds has had anything to do with baseball in like 6, 7, 8 years. It took that long for somebody to finally bring him in some kind of role. But I used the Barry Bonds example as a good example of what I wish wrestlers would do. I wish they would do the same thing. Have an understanding that, listen, this is not going to serve any good purpose for us. It's not going to serve any good purpose for wrestling to go on this show. And it all goes back to her coverage of the Benoit story back in 07. Okay? Talking about how Benoit may have been depressed over being demoted from the Four Horsemen to ECW. This is what she said. Being demoted from the Horsemen to ECW. I mean, I must have been really out of the loop at that time because I had no idea. And that Jane Velez Mitchell woman who would fill in for her sometimes in some of those shows, another so-called journalist, another piece of garbage. I mean, these people are just awful. Okay, they're awful. They're awful human beings, and I just wish people would stay the hell away from them. There's nothing good that can come from going on their shows. Nobody watches their shows anyway. And if they come calling, again, they're not looking to promote what a wonderful person that XYZ dead wrestler was. Okay, fill in the blank dead wrestler was. They don't give a shit. They have an agenda, and I wish people would stay the hell away from them. And so I want to wrap up here with some audio that I'm going to play for you. This is the Warrior in his own words from just a few years ago. You're going to hear the first few seconds of this and the words that he uses, and you're going to think, wow, given the way that he died or may have died. But I want to play it because it's actually some of the most motivational stuff I've ever heard come out of the man's mouth. And he said a lot of far-out stuff over the years, but I think there's a lot of truth in what he's saying here. And I think it sums up the Ultimate Warrior better than anything I could ever say. So with that being said, and fair warning, there is some foul language here. But with that being said, I give you the Warrior in his own words.
Many of you, many people in this world would be better off if they had a heart attack. If they didn't survive it, then they would be removed from the misery of their lives. The misery that they see their lives as being every fucking day, every fucking minute, every fucking hour, bitching and whining and complaining about having this great fucking thing called life. I mean, is that so outrageous? Is that so insane? Is that so crazy to think my fucking life having it, man, is awesome? Is it? I think if you think it is, I think you're fucking pathetic. I think you're less than human, less than being a human being. And if you did survive, those of you who would be better off having a heart attack, then maybe, like many of the other people who write their stories after they suffer a tragedy or suffer a serious illness like a heart attack or cancer, they finally come to the realization after wasting decades and decades of their life, there is something special about being alive. Every morning you wake up, there are two doors. Behind one lies your destiny and living. Behind the other lies death. Being alive, having breath, your heart pumping blood, you being able to see through your eyes, that's not living. That's being alive. Living is engaging your life with intensity and passion. People ask me, what, Warrior, what are you passionate about? It finally came to me years ago. You know what I'm passionate about? I'm passionate about fucking passion. I'm passionate about intensity. All the self-help books, all the motivational books, the inspirational tools that you can buy, the bottom line in them is, do the work. Once you get through all the pages and all the rules and all the principles and all the formats and all the plans and all the templates, it comes down to that. Do the fucking work. And sometimes the only way to go about doing the work is get fucking raw and get fucking intense. Get angry and aggressive and make it fucking happen for yourself. You can start today. I don't care when your life clock started ticking. You can start fucking right now today. My advice? Fucking do it. Do it. Fucking do it. Dig fucking deep and get it done. Do the work of your life.
Wow. He was one of a kind, that's for sure. He will be missed. WrestleMania was 1 week ago, last Sunday, from the Silverdome, apparently, in New Orleans, Louisiana. I have a whole photo gallery, by the way. I do this every year. This is the third WrestleMania I've attended live, and so I have a whole photo gallery from the whole week in New Orleans up on my Facebook page if you want to go check that out. I said on episode 322, which was the last show we did, the roundtable show post-WrestleMania, that I didn't think WrestleMania was a great show, but I thought it was a damn good show. So I've since gone back and watched it on the network. And by the way, I thought it came across great on TV, the crowd, the visuals, the set. I thought the set was actually really cool. I mean, it would have been nice to have some New Orleans-themed stuff, like alligators or voodoo shit or whatever. I guess it was kind of plain in that respect. But being there live, I mean, the set, they put so much time and effort and expense into this stuff. It's just, you stand there in awe when you look at it. And to think that that set will only be used that one time. And now I guess it goes back into storage. But again, damn good show overall. I thought the best opening to a WrestleMania show ever, with Hogan, Austin, and Rock all out there at the same time doing their thing, doing their catchphrases, three of the biggest stars of all time. Probably two, if you count Hogan, Austin, the two biggest stars. I know some people might lump Bruno in there, which would be fair. But Hogan, Austin, those are the two biggest names in the history of that company, maybe of wrestling in this country all time. And to have all three of them doing their thing in the ring and come out to their music and get those huge, loud ovations and the love from the crowd was really cool. I thought that Hogan-Austin stare down, even though it's not going to lead to anything, I thought that was actually a really cool moment. The tag team title, four-way on the pre-show, excellent match, especially when it came down to the Usos and the Real Americans. Triple H and Daniel Bryan had a damn good match. I love Triple H's entrance. Nowhere near as hokey as his entrance when he came out wearing the furry costume at WrestleMania 22. He came out like a Viking back then. This one I thought was actually great. And I did notice. I didn't notice it the first time because I was in the building, but watching it back, I did notice Sasha Banks as one of the women from NXT. Cesaro body slamming Big Show out of the ring to win the Battle Royal. This was not a Lex Luger hip toss on Yokozuna. This was not, well, maybe it was kind of a body slam or a hip check. No, this was a full-on, I will hold you up here, and I will throw you out of the ring body slam. One for the highlight reel. And the visual of Cesaro not only slamming him out of the ring, but then they do that wide shot of the crowd, and people are just jumping up and down. They're going crazy. I was there. I could vouch for it. Everybody was going nuts when he did that. So that Battle Royal turned out to be a hell of a lot better than I thought it would be. At least the finish did. Although, props to Kofi Kingston. I don't know how he didn't break an ankle, break a leg, or just botch the spot. I watched that back a few times, and that guy is special. That was an incredible spot, the fact that he was able to just keep his foot on those steps, and people were going crazy for him. That was actually a really cool moment as well. I love Bray Wyatt's entrance. Being there live for that was a special moment. Seeing the streak end was, it was historic. If nothing else, can't say that it wasn't historic, because it was. The match was no good, but the finish and the reactions on people's faces in the building was something that's going to be remembered 20 years from now. It was a big, big moment. And then the main event. The first half, I was there. I could tell you very few people cared much about the first 10, 12 minutes of that match. The second half of the main event, and I think a lot of that had to do with the finish from the Undertaker match. The women's match just died a death, and I felt bad for them. I mean, that match was going to be a cluster no matter what. It's just a bunch of bodies in there. I feel like half the people, I couldn't even recognize half the women that were in there, who was who. That match didn't stand a chance, but people were still hungover from the Undertaker-Brock finish, and I think that did hamper the main event a little bit. But then, when it picked up from the middle on, it was awesome. Everything about that match from that point on was just flawless. Having been there and now having gone back and watched it again, I'll go as far as to say when I look at this pay-per-view or special event, I guess, as they're now called. I thought it was the best WrestleMania top to bottom since 19 in Seattle. So the best WrestleMania show in over a decade. And I know that there's going to be people who hear that and they think I'm nuts. They think, oh, you're only saying that because Daniel Bryan won. I'm not. Take my word for it. I'm not. I'm looking at the entire show. The ending was perfect. The ending was exactly what it had to be. And the people were into it. The people were not, you know, it's like, oh, okay, we know how this ends. It's so predictable. If they felt that way, they certainly did not let that hamper their reactions because the people were going nuts for that guy all night long. But there were enough special things that happened on the show and enough good matches, even though Undertaker Brock I didn't think was very good, that when you look at this card from start to finish, the opening segment, the pre-show match, the Battle Royal, or the Battle Royal finish at least, both Bryan matches, the guy goes out there and has 2 4-star matches on the same show. I don't even know that that's ever been done before on a WrestleMania. Just everything. Even Cena Wyatt. Cena Wyatt was not a great match. It was good, and it was the wrong finish, but it was a good showing, I thought, for Bray, which was the most important thing. And again, that entrance was, being sung down to the ring, and they're wearing the buzzard masks and everything else, and they're chained. I didn't even notice that when I was there live, but when I watched it back, I noticed when the band was performing, the guys that were wearing the bird masks, were actually chained to the equipment. Just everything about that, and the voodoo dancers and everything, it was so awesome. And I have not been impressed by WrestleMania for a long time. There have been great matches at WrestleMania shows. Don't get me wrong, absolutely. I mean, people talk a lot about WrestleMania 24 in Orlando. You know, I don't know. I never saw that show as being anything special aside from Michaels retiring Flair. That was a historic moment. I thought Ric Flair went out until he came back in TNA and he fucked everything up. But that night, he went out and had a good match. He had the best match at that age in his state that he could possibly have. You know, understanding that Ric Flair was not going to go out there and have a Ric Flair match like he would have in 1990. Him and Shawn went out there. They had a good match with a very memorable finish, very emotional finish. But aside from that, you know, and I guess the Money in the Bank match was good. I think Punk won that year. My Undertaker and Edge, I don't want to say it was a bad match. I just never thought Undertaker Edge as a main event was anything special that year. You know, the most memorable moment for me from that match was Charles Robinson doing his best Ultimate Warrior impression running down to the ring. I say Ultimate Warrior because somebody went on YouTube and actually took that moment of him running down that long-ass aisleway, and they set it to the Ultimate Warrior's theme music. I laugh my ass off every time I watch it. I just didn't think overall 24 was that special. 25 had the best Mania match with Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, but the rest of that show sucked. 21 is an underrated show. I talked about that in the history segment on the Sound Off recently. I think that show gets overlooked a lot. That was a really good show. But I would put this one just ahead of that one. So, again, people may think I'm crazy for saying that, but really think about how many great top-to-bottom WrestleMania shows we've had over the last decade. You're not going to find that many of them. You know, you're really not going to find that many of them. And I would say, top-to-bottom, best WrestleMania since 19. Now, the end of the streak. Had some more time to think about this, and I went back again. I watched it on the network. According to, I think it was The Observer. I don't know if it was The Torch or The Observer, but they talked a lot about the ending of the streak and what was going on behind the scenes, before the match, after the match. Apparently it was a Vince McMahon call. So whether The Undertaker had to be talked into it, or if he was totally cool with it, if he was down, I don't know. But it was a Vince McMahon call that tonight the streak ends. And Vince also rode in the ambulance with The Undertaker to the hospital because he suffered a really bad concussion. He was really out of it backstage. So a little bit of what Paul Heyman talked about in his promo on Monday was legit. I don't know if he collapsed as soon as he went through the curtain, but they did have to load him up in an ambulance. Vince went with him, so he wasn't even there at the building for the last two matches on the show and the main event, which I think tells you exactly how he feels about The Undertaker, how much he respects the guy for what he's given to that company for decades. Can't even say years at this point. What he's done to his body and given to Vince McMahon for decades now. How can you not have respect for the guy? And maybe he could see the writing on the wall Vince did, and maybe that's why he made the call. I don't know. Maybe he could tell that this guy, God, this guy's in rough shape. We can't keep doing this. It's time. And he felt differently than, you know, I did. Look, if it were up to me, I never would have ended the streak. He would have retired at 21-0, 22-0, 23, whatever the number is. But clearly he felt differently about it. He may think Taker is done. He made the call. The streak had to end. That was the right business decision to make. But you know what? I watched that finish back on the network, and to all the people saying it was a botch, you could tell that, or the referee didn't know. Look, I guess it's possible the referee wasn't clued in. Why the fuck would you not clue the referee in on it, you know, 10 seconds before the finishing fall? He's got an earpiece in his ear. It'd be very easy for somebody to go, this is the finish. Be aware. FYI, this is it. Why would you run the risk of the referee panicking and potentially fucking up the finish, one of the most famous finishes in WrestleMania history? It doesn't make any sense to me why, in his earpiece at least, at the last minute, maybe he didn't go out there knowing, but why they wouldn't include Chad Patton in right before that final fall after the third F5 doesn't make any sense to me. So I'm not sure I really buy that. I watched it back. I don't see any hesitation at all. He counts the three. He doesn't hold up a little bit. I see him wave it off when the match is over, but that could just be him saying, you know, the match is over. The streak's over. Or maybe he was just doing that because he really thought he fucked up and he was trying to cover his own ass. I don't know. I'm sure his heart was skipping a few beats that night. I know if that were me, I would have been, you know, probably pale as a goat. Well, I'm pale as a ghost anyway, but I didn't see anything wrong with the finish in terms of there being a botch or the referee holding up his count. I don't know what these people are watching. It looked perfectly fine to me. I watched it back, and all of the shocked expressions on people's faces, including that one guy with his eyes, you know, bugging out of his head, poor guy. I know I was smiling when the camera caught me. I was rocking my troll face. I saw all the screenshots that people sent me. By the way, I made the latest Botchamania video, so I'm very proud of that. You know, I was just as surprised as anyone else. I was just as happy to be there to witness history. Basically, I didn't think it would happen, but I was happy. That's why I was smiling. You know, it wasn't like I wanted to see Brock win the match. A lot of people very upset that a part timer is the one who ended the streak. And you can make the argument, you know, what does it do for Brock? Brock's already a made man and all that kind of stuff. It's been a week. I've thought about it. I've gone back and I've watched it. And even though I would not have done that, and I'm really, in some ways, I'm kind of bummed that they ended the streak, I don't mind it. I'm actually fine with them making Brock the guy to do it. Because between that and the promo the next night and, you know, rumors of what some of the matches may be coming up in the next 6 months, 12 months, if they handled Brock the way that, frankly, he should have been handled from his first night in, not losing to John Cena in his first pay-per-view match, if they treat Brock the way that a guy like Brock should be treated, as a special attraction who just mows through people, who just destroys people, and then eventually, whoever the guy is, whether it's Brian, whether it's Cesaro, whether it's Roman Reigns, or whoever, they decide is going to be the guy to topple this guy. Until then, Brock should be booked as an unstoppable beast. That's exactly how Brock Lesnar should be treated. And I could tell you, being in the building for Raw the next night, he was unbelievably hated. I mean, you would not find a person in that arena more hated, not even John Cena, than Brock Lesnar. Every time they put that graphic up from WrestleMania, the streak ends, Brock Lesnar coming up later tonight, the place erupted in boos. People hated this man. Hated this man. So if the idea was to get more heat on him because they've got big plans, maybe they're going to put the belt on him. Look, I did a whole Layfield Report column, and I talked about it on my podcast, you know, 2 months or whatever it was before WrestleMania, that I would love to have seen them get the belt on Brock, maybe at Elimination Chamber, and because he's a part-timer, I wouldn't expect him to have a long run with it, so I don't care if he wins the belt at Elimination Chamber and loses it a month and a half later, who cares? He's not going to be around anyway. But have him go into WrestleMania in this David versus Goliath match and defend against Brian and have Brian beat him. I just think Brian and Brock can have a hell of a match. And now, they could still do it. You know, I mean, if I were them, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't know what plans they have for Batista. You know, the plan may still be to get the belt on him when his movie comes out or whatever. I would almost just wait until SummerSlam and have Brock beat Bryan then for the belt. I like that idea. Daniel Bryan does not have to have a year-long run as champion. He has to have at least a few months after everything. You can't just take the title off him right away. Give him a little run with it. Let him go through some people. Maybe Bray Wyatt at some point. You know, they could do. They still have to do the Bray-Bryan match because Bray's got a win over him at the Royal Rumble. You know, that has to come back at some point into play in these storylines. It has to build to something between the two of them, and then Bryan gets his win back, makes him even bigger going into SummerSlam, and then putting the belt on Brock, I got no problem with that at all. I don't even care if Brock's only on television, you know, every 2-3 weeks. Doesn't matter. They put the belt on The Rock. It's not like The Rock was on television every week. The Rock had one grand title defense the whole time he was champion. It was the rematch with Punk. That was it. But the title kind of felt bigger than it really was because The Rock was such a big star and The Rock had it. And The Rock took it everywhere, the red carpets and all the different appearances. You know, it was kind of cool. It kind of meant something. So the fact that Brock is a part-timer, it doesn't really bother me so much. I just accept it. I think they can turn this into something positive if they build Brock the right way. Now, if Brock comes out in a month and they put him on pay-per-view and he loses, then this was the stupidest fucking thing I've ever seen. Just the dumbest fucking thing that you could possibly imagine. I can't imagine that that's what they're going to do. If they protect him, they can really build this guy up as the monster of all monsters, put the belt on him at some point, and it'll mean so much more when whoever it is, whether it's a young guy or Brian or whoever, beats him for it. Thank you also to all the people who tweeted me during the show about their network feed. Aside from some audio issues early on, it seems like things went pretty smoothly overall for you guys. Not perfect, but there was no catastrophe during the show. WWE did announce the number of network subscribers the day after WrestleMania, 667,287. That's in the first 42 days of the network being launched. So they claim, they put a press release out, they say we're on track for the 1 million that we promised by year's end. You may recall I predicted right around 600,000, so I wasn't off by much. It's a decent number, you know, not a great number, but it's not a failure either. It's somewhere in the middle. They've said they need 1 million to break even. You know, I have no doubt they'll hit that number at some point, but I'm not convinced that they're going to do it by the end of the year like they promised. You know, I look at it like this. WrestleMania 30 is the biggest possible event they could have offered to attract subscribers. At $9.99, no less, okay, which is a steal. And they got 667,000. What can they possibly offer between now and the end of this year that's going to bring in another 400,000. You know, I'm sure they're going to raise the price next year. I'm almost positive that they're going to raise the price because the price is probably too low as it is. And they may not even offer WrestleMania on the network again after this. I wonder if this will turn out to be a one-shot deal after the way that it did. They have to be disappointed, though. You know, again, it's not a failure of a number, but I can't see how they're, you know, doing cartwheels, jumping up and down happy at this number. So after this, maybe it turns out to be the only WrestleMania on the network, and you have to buy it on traditional pay-per-view. We'll see what happens. Clearly, the number did not make people on Wall Street very comfortable, since there's been a massive sell-off ever since. The stock's down. Last I checked, I think it was down over $10 from its peak. So congrats to Webmaster Mike for getting out when I told him to. That brings us to Monday Night Raw, which was live from the Smoothie King Center, one of the more horrendous arena names in this country, the Smoothie King Center in New Orleans, Louisiana, the night after WrestleMania. The good, the bad, and the ugly. This is the live perspective here, since I was at the arena. And I have to say, and maybe I am a little bit biased, but I've went back and I've watched it. My mind has not changed. I think that Raw last Monday was the best Raw show in years. Don't ask me how many, I couldn't tell you, but find me another Raw with that kind of crowd that pass by that quickly, okay, because a lot of these three-hour shows are drag-ass by the third hour, that was as newsworthy and really planned for the future, I think, as much as this show did. This show, you know, it didn't have that one really epic great match, but there were so many great things on the show. It didn't need that one epic match. It had some good matches, some great promos. In a lot of ways, it felt like a changing of the guard. You know, for the first time, when Brian came out, it really felt like he was the man in that company. I know John Cena is still the guy, but it actually felt like this is the guy now. You know, Brian's up here, and now Cena's kind of right below him, even if that's not really accurate. That's what it felt like. Hasn't felt like that at all up until now. We had The Shield. The Shield is back at a headline spot, full-on babyface now. Very happy to see that. And all three of those guys are going to headline at some point. You could just see. They're all going to be main eventers at some point down the road, maybe even before this year is over. Cesaro's a Heyman guy now. He's also moved up to that next level between the Battle Royal win, breaking away from Swagger, now with Heyman as his mouthpiece, which anybody who's listened to this show for any length of time knows how happy I am about that, because I was pitching that last year. I thought that they should put Paul Heyman with Cesaro, so, you know, better late than never, I suppose. And on top of all that, there's an NXT invasion taking place. They're bringing up a lot of new faces from developmental in the coming weeks. We saw promo videos for Adam Rose. We saw promo videos for Bo Dallas. We had Alexander Rusev finally, after weeks and weeks of waiting, made his in-ring debut. And we had the surprise debut of Paige. That's four people who were either up or about to be brought up, and there may be more. This may not be the end of it. I saw Tyler Breeze on Twitter over the last week teasing that maybe SmackDown needs to feel his presence. I don't know if maybe that was just a tease. It may not mean anything. Why SmackDown? Because it's not like they're split brands anymore. So we'll see who else they may bring up. But it just felt like this was a big show. This is a very newsworthy show, and it was a hell of a lot of fun to be there. I won't say that the crowd overall was quite as wild, or I don't want to say as fun, because we had a lot of fun. Maybe not as fun as it was last year in New Jersey. I would put that New Jersey crowd on a different level still. But anybody who was in the building would agree with me. It was a hell of a lot of fun to be there. And, you know, I did see Bob Backlund doing his shtick up on the concourse. If you want to take a picture of Bob Backlund putting you in a headlock, you can do that if you have $40 to spare, which I wasn't about to do. Met a lot of people who listened to the show, by the way, that day. I met a lot of people over the course of my trip to New Orleans who listened to the Sound Off, who told me they started their own podcast because, you know, they started listening to mine. And I mean, that's a really cool thing. But even just walking to the arena, I met, you know, one or two people who listened to the show. At the arena, I met a handful of other people. So I had a blast. I mean, I had a great time. When Brian came out in the opening segment, when Justin Roberts introduced him and he came out, it's hard for me to put into words the kind of reaction that he got. I wasn't there when Hogan came back and he got that great reaction. Was it Montreal, I think it was, on SmackDown, when Hogan came out and got like a 5-minute long standing ovation from the crowd. And nobody is a better master than Hulk Hogan at milking a crowd reaction, but that was special. I wasn't there for that, so it's hard for me to compare, but that's the only thing I could think of. I have never seen a guy come out on Raw and get this kind of reaction, maybe not since then, okay? This was an incredible reaction. These people would not shut up. They would not let him speak. They were chanting his name. It got louder and louder and louder. He interrupted. They kept doing it. Then they started the whole "you deserve it" chant. These people were 120% in favor of this man. And it was a lot of fun to watch because it's all built up to this moment. And here he is going out there. And what a week he's had. You know, going to WrestleMania, having two matches, beating Triple H, which not too many people can say they've been able to do. And then coming out of WrestleMania 30 with the big pyro celebration, both belts, comes out the next night, gets that kind of reaction, goes out on SmackDown, and gets to do the whole posing routine with Hulk Hogan. It's hilarious to see Hulk Hogan out there doing the yes chant and throwing his arms up in the air. And Brian says, "Listen, there's one thing I've always wanted to do, hit the man's music," and they play Real American and they pose. And I could tell you that anybody who grew up listening to that theme song and watching Hogan pose when they were a kid, it would be a cool moment for any of them to be in the ring doing the same thing. And then I know he got married on Friday to top it all off. So he's had a pretty incredible week. But being there in the building, the response was just unbelievable. It was very loud. People hated Triple H and Stephanie when they came out. And when he made the match, saying it was going to be Triple H against Bryan in the main event, I knew right away that pretty good chance this match is not actually going to get off the ground, or it's not going to go more than 30 seconds before somebody interferes. But that still was, you know, it was a big main event to make. People were pretty pumped up about it. We had the Wyatt family against John Cena, Big E, and Sheamus. Sheamus, I don't know what it is about Sheamus. People just boo him when he comes out, when it comes to these crowds. I don't know why. I know why they boo Cena. You know, it's the cool thing to do, and, you know, Cena's the establishment. I don't know what Sheamus ever did to anybody to get this kind of hate. The same thing happened last year in New Jersey, and it happened again this year. Maybe they still, you know, they resent the fact that he beat Bryan in 18 seconds, and so they take it out on him. It's not his fault. Big E was booed until he did that power spot where he took Rowan over his knee three times for a backbreaker. Then they gave him polite cheers. And then I think Luke Harper got tagged in, and they immediately went back to booing Big E whenever he would pull off a move. Cena was hated. He was just absolutely detested by this crowd. I love the crowd chanting John Cena sucks to the tune of his theme song. I thought that was awesome. And yes, I had so many messages from people. Oh, you know, this is not the first time that's happened. It is the first time that it's happened in this country. I think the first time I ever saw that was on YouTube. There was a video. I think it was a bunch of kids in like Venezuela or something. They were doing it. So I heard it before, but never at an event like a Raw show. So I hope it catches on. No offense to John Cena. I don't have anything against him personally, but I thought that was very clever. And I don't know if you guys could tell the crowd singing the whole he's got the whole world in his hands thing for the Wyatts. You probably heard it a little bit. I think what happened is when they went to commercial, I mean, I guess if you have the app, you could have seen it. But if you don't have the stupid app, then you probably missed it. They went to a commercial break, and it got to a point where the entire crowd was singing the song. Like, you could kind of hear it at first, but then I think they cut away to commercial, and the entire building was singing the song, like, in unison. It was awesome. The Wyatts were just beloved. Bray wins the match, Sister Abigail on Big E. And, yeah, Wyatt's over big time in New Orleans. We had that promo vignette for Bo Dallas talking about how, you know, it's not impossible, it's I'm possible. So he's doing almost like the old DDP, you know, motivational gimmick. So we'll see how it goes down. I mean, I think part of the reason it worked so much and people got into the Bo Dallas character on NXT is because he started off in a lot of ways like John Cena as this bread and butter, white meat baby face that people just didn't want to see. They hated him. They resented him for it. They booed him. They kept chanting Bo Ring during his matches and no more Bo. And he tweaked his character over time to be this guy who was clearly full of himself and would play to the crowd like a baby face, even though you knew deep down he was a heel. And he started doing heelish stuff. And now it's gotten to the point where not everybody, but there are people now who are cheering him because they just love his whole act. Now you're bringing him to the main show. There's a lot of people who probably have no idea who he is, and you're bringing him up already playing that character. I don't know if it'll work the same way. I hope it does. I'm a Bo Dallas fan. I have grown to like this guy, so I hope everything works out for him, and we'll see if that's the way to go. So he's coming soon. We had Fandango and Summer Rae against Santino and Emma. Really bummed that they didn't come out to Emma's music. I thought that'd get over big with the crowd, but they won the match, and then they played Emma's music, and then you had everybody doing the Emma dance. People probably putting other people's eye out. It's a dangerous dance. You got to watch when you start doing that. Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman came out for that promo segment, which was awesome. Awesome. Paul Heyman is so fucking great. He's awesome. I don't know what else there is to say. I mean, we already know this. Heyman had the whole crowd in the palm of his hand, and all Brock had to do was just stand there and look menacing. He would smirk and smile every now and then. All of a sudden, then he would turn on a dime. He'd have this look on his face like he wanted to just rip you to shreds. Brock is at his best when he's silent. Silent but deadly, I think, is the way to go with Brock Lesnar. The minute he opens his mouth, you're asking for trouble. And that's why it's so important to have Paul Heyman there as his mouthpiece. Heyman just played the crowd like a fiddle. He came out as the most hated man along with Brock in the building for ending the streak. You know, the man who orchestrated the end of the streak. And to his credit, when he came back out later in the show for the Cesaro stuff, all of a sudden the crowd loved him. So the crowd can go from loving him to hating him on the drop of a dime. And every single time he just has them in the palm of his hand. And this was basically just talking about the end of the streak. Brock as being, you know, the NCAA champion, the UFC champion, the youngest WWE champion, nobody else, not even The Rock, not Steve Austin, Hulk Hogan. Nobody can claim the same things that Brock Lesnar can claim. And Brock has a victory over, not Austin, he's got a win over The Rock, he's got a win on SmackDown over Hogan, in a bear hug, I remember that. Yeah, Brock's got wins over a lot of those guys too. I don't know if Heyman brought that up or not. But this was great, and as quickly as they came out, they left. Undertaker did not make an appearance, although from what I understand, he was backstage. He was there, probably very worse for wear. I don't know if he was supposed to be on the show originally, and because he was hurt, they decided to hold him off. I still maintain that I don't think Undertaker has wrestled his last match, just for the record. I said that on the last show. I stand by that. I don't think he's done. Whether it's WrestleMania, I don't really see a point to him wrestling at anything other than WrestleMania. But to say that the streak is over and therefore there's no point to Undertaker wrestling anymore, you know, look, if physically he can't go, then he can't go. I could be wrong. But if he can go and he wants to wrestle again, I see nothing wrong with him wrestling. You could still build up drama in an Undertaker match even without the streak being on the line if you promote it as being his last match. That's the only way I think you can really build drama to an Undertaker match in the future, is if you make it very clear in advance, you have him go out there and say, this is the last journey for me, this is it, no matter what, win, lose, or draw, this is my last match. And then you've got some drama, because people are not going to want to see the Undertaker lose in his final match. I think that's the only way to really approach it. Otherwise, yeah, then don't have him wrestle again. We had a promo for Adam Rose. We had actually two promos during this show for Adam Rose. One on his bus with people dressed up as bunnies. And he's a party guy. He's a party animal. That's the new gimmick, the former Leo Kruger. He's only been Adam Rose on NXT for a few weeks. So they're not wasting any time bringing this guy up. And it makes sense because as Leo Kruger, he was on NXT forever. You know, it's not like, well, this guy needs a little more seasoning. He's got plenty of seasoning. Either he's ready to come up now or he's never going to be ready. So we haven't seen a lot of the gimmick so far, and I guess we're going to be seeing a lot more of it on the main roster going forward. I look forward to that. We had Batista and Randy Orton against the Usos. Pretty much a non-match for the tag team titles. They didn't care about the tag team belts. I think Randy Orton even said as much in a promo backstage earlier on, I don't care about being the tag team champion. Which was great. But they beat the crap out of Jimmy and Jay, Batista bomb to one of them on the ring steps on the outside. And the segment ended with Orton and Batista standing united. I like this. I actually like the whole unholy temporary union they've got going here with Batista and Orton and now Triple H. They basically have this informal reunion of Evolution going on, and I'm digging it. I like it. I like that a lot. Rob Van Dam came back. No real surprise. Saw him in New Orleans, figured if he wasn't in the Battle Royal at WrestleMania, he'd be on this show. Kind of an uneventful return, to be honest with you. There was no grandeur. They had Damian Sandow. They gave him the jobber entrance. I don't think that aired on TV. So he's standing in the ring, and Justin Roberts just says, please welcome back Rob Van Dam. And out he came, and he had a two-minute match with Sandow. And that was it. And he left. So clearly they don't have any plans for RVD. They're just happy to have him back, and no obvious program for him going forward. I guess we'll see this Monday and in the coming weeks what they've got up their sleeve for him. They aired a commercial for the Journey to WrestleMania Daniel Bryan special, which debuted on the WWE Network this week, which is basically a video diary of his entire WrestleMania weekend. I had a chance to sit down and watch it yesterday. It's very good up until a certain point. I thought it was actually really, really well done. They've even got some Ring of Honor footage in there. Seth Rollins is all over it. He talks a lot about Bryan in ROH, and they got footage from him in ROH, which was very cool. They have footage of him wrestling for Shawn Michaels' old Texas Wrestling Academy down in San Antonio when he first broke in. So there's some really cool footage at the beginning of it, and they actually go pretty in-depth on him and Sheamus being bumped from the show at WrestleMania 27 and how bummed out they were, and they have comments about that from Sheamus, the 18-second match at WrestleMania, and how they felt, you know, behind the scenes about that. They have footage from the dark match the dark match at the Miami Raw, which was the first post-WrestleMania Raw I ever went to, that was the night Brock Lesnar came back. That was another wild show. Bryan wasn't even in a match on the show. He was in like a very brief backstage segment with AJ, didn't even speak because he was so angry over losing the night before. But they kept him off that show, and then when the show was over, they had a six-man tag, and he came out, and the place went nuts. It was the first time I ever saw a crowd in unison doing the Yes chant. It was amazing. And they actually had dark match footage of that. They had dark match footage of him cutting a promo when the show was over about how, you know, I guess you guys gave them a new idea for a t-shirt. So that's never before been seen. So there's some rare stuff on there. The problem I had with the special is that at some point, midway or a little past the midway point, it becomes all kayfabe. So they talk about, they have Brie on there talking about what a tough challenge it's going to be to go in there against Triple H and how the Authority has tried to hold him down. It's like they wanted to do it both ways. They wanted to do like a legit straightforward documentary type thing, but then at some point they went into like full-on character mode and it just got so corny. I was watching it with two like casual fans, and it was funny to me because the girl I was watching with actually said the same thing. She's like, wait a minute. Are they in character now? Like, what is this? This sucks. So, that kind of brought it down a few notches for me. It's still good. It's still worth going out of your way to watch. It was very well done. I hope they do more of them in the future. But that was a disappointment when they transitioned into kayfabe mode. We had Bad News Barrett finally wrestles a match. He can wrestle. His legs aren't broken. It's unbelievable. Came out for a match against Rey Mysterio. Poor Rey. They keep putting Rey in these positions to get booed. They did it at the Royal Rumble. Even Steve Austin kind of had some fun at his expense. He's like, poor Rey Mysterio, what were you thinking? Sending him out there at number 30. Barrett comes out. He gets an unbelievable reaction. Yeah, you got a lot of British fans in the crowd, a lot of fans from the UK showing their love for their countrymen. He comes in the ring. He's doing the whole, I've got some bad news for you. And then Rey like smacks the mic out of his hand and instantly became the most hated man in the entire building. Even more so than Brock Lesnar. Barrett beats him, gets another monster reaction when the match was over. I did not see his match on SmackDown. I know he wrestled. I don't know if they piped in cheers. I read reports from people who were in the Cajun Dome who said his reaction on Tuesday night was nothing like the reaction he got on Monday. My guess would be that a lot of those fans who stayed over probably flew home on Tuesday. And so you had a crowd that just was like, oh, look, it's Bad News Barrett. So I don't know if he's going to get a reaction like that every single week. But for one night anyway, he came across like a star. We had Alexander Rusev against Zack Ryder. Pretty simple what happened here. Rusev does a few power moves, puts him in the camel clutch. Made short work of him. Then we got the Ultimate Warrior promo. His first on Raw since 1996, which turned out to be far more historic than any of us could have imagined when it first took place. We had AJ Lee and Tamina out there. AJ's gloating about winning 13-1 odds. She overcame those odds at WrestleMania. She says, I am the Divas Division. And that was the cue for Paige to come out, making her Raw debut. Finally, at long last, Paige is on the main roster. Paige and Emma, both on the main roster now. I look forward to an eventual Paige-Emma feud, which, judging by how they're booking Emma these days, may be a few years away. But I do think that Paige and Emma could be like a modern-day incarnation of Trish and Lita, kind of the way people look at that. It just may take a while to get there. But Paige comes out. She is very un-Paige-like in her first promo. Did not fit her character at all coming out to congratulate AJ on her victory at WrestleMania. I don't care. I'm fine with it. She's on the main roster. That's all that matters. But it was just comical to me. Like, she's out here complimenting AJ on a big win. You would never see Paige doing this on NXT. And AJ is just a complete bitch to her, slaps her in the face, and says, you know what? Since you're dressed for combat, why don't we have a match? And I'll even put my Divas Championship on the line. And you pretty much knew at that point what was going to happen. I think the people in the building knew where this was going. The people were reacting to Paige like she was a total star. I don't know how it came across, you know, to you guys watching from home, but they exploded when Paige got the three. It was a lot like when Dolph Ziggler got the three on Del Rio and cashed in Money in the Bank last year in New Jersey. That's what it felt like in the building. When the referee hit three, the place just came unglued. And Paige sold it. You know, she was shocked. She couldn't believe it. She ran off with the belt. And so Paige becomes the first person to be the, essentially, the undisputed Divas Champion. She's the women's champ on NXT. She's the Divas Champion on the main roster. I would have to think they may just have her vacate the title now. I don't know, but that would be my guess. And this was a really, really cool moment, and it's cool to have a women's feud worth a damn, because you have to think that going forward there'll be more matches. They'll build up a whole feud now with AJ and with Paige. They can do this for the next 2-3 months if they want. And it'll be nice to have a feud that we can actually care about now and get behind. It's not just the very lazy total divas versus non-total divas garbage that we've gotten now for many months. So this was great. And I don't worry about Paige at all. Some people think, oh, it's too early. Why'd they put the belt on her? I'm not complaining about this. I've been waiting for her to be called up to the main roster. We need some new faces. She's been more than ready for a long time now. And I know how things turned out with Gail Kim. Gail Kim was the last person who came in on her first night, won the belt. And she, you know, her run didn't turn out very well. I put that on WWE. Gail Kim is fucking awesome. I still to this day don't know what the hell happened with Gail Kim in WWE. I never heard that she, you know, said the wrong thing or fucked the wrong guy or, you know, did anything like that. I have no idea. I watched Gail Kim in TNA. She's awesome. So WWE's loss is TNA's gain when it comes to Gail Kim. I trust they will not do the same thing with Paige. I think Paige is like a pet project for them in NXT and for Triple H, and I think they'll do right by her. And she's also younger, a lot younger than Gail Kim was, and they like that. They like youth over experience. I think she's 21 now, I think. So I think she'll do just fine. Hulk Hogan came out to present the Andre the Giant Memorial Trophy to Cesaro. Hogan disappeared very quickly, said, I'm out of here. And Cesaro had the spotlight. Zeb Coulter grabbed the mic and cut a promo on Cesaro. Cesaro took the mic back and said, I'm actually a Paul Heyman guy now. People went nuts. Heyman came out. This is like the first time it reminded me of the old days in the 80s when you had like these manager wars where managers would like bid for the services of certain wrestlers. And every manager was in competition with the other. Even when Savage, when Randy Savage came in, nobody knew which manager was going to be able to get him. It turned out to be Elizabeth. When Bam Bam Bigelow came in, all the managers were vying for his services. And then he ended up going with Oliver Humperdinck. Seeing Zeb Coulter and Paul Heyman in there together like this kind of brought me back to those days in a way. I would love to see them bring in one or two more managers or advocates, whatever you want to call them, and really build up something when it comes to these guys. So that was actually cool. Swagger came out. And by the way, Heyman dubbed Cesaro the King of Swing, which it took no more than 5 seconds for that chant to catch on now, the entire building chanting King of Swing. Swagger came out, attacked him from behind, destroyed the trophy, so that thing didn't last very long. And that led to a match, non-finish. Swagger bailed, so this feud, I guess, will continue. Hopefully it continues and it ends very quickly, because Cesaro does not need to be relegated to feuding with Jack Swagger. He's better than that. Finally, we had the main event segment. Supposed to be Daniel Bryan and Triple H for the WWE title. Match never really got started. We had Batista. Orton came out to beat up Bryan. Kane came out to chokeslam him. The Shield came out from the crowd. There was a standoff between the Shield and all the heels. Triple H tried to play the role of Peacemaker. He got speared by Roman Reigns. All hell broke loose. Big reaction from the crowd. And the final shot is Daniel Bryan standing there in unity with the Shield. And so this will be our big feud, I guess, main event feud going forward. The Shield and Daniel Bryan feuding with the Authority is a very intriguing storyline. And if you remember, it was only a few weeks ago on the show that we had a listener write in to the mailbag with the idea that maybe post-WrestleMania they would do the Shield against Evolution, and it looks like we may be getting that. I don't know if it'll be a an actual match with Triple H, Batista, and Orton against all three of them at the next pay-per-view. I guess we'll find out in short order what direction they're going to go in. I like this a lot. I really do. I like this a lot. Finally having somebody new solidified in the main spot with the belt, somebody not named John Cena or Randy Orton, is refreshing for a change. We have the Shield now, who are solid baby faces. It's obvious they're going to keep these guys together for at least a little bit longer, which they absolutely should. It would be ridiculously dumb to break them up right now. And those ghost masks that they wear to the ring now, if they start selling those things are going to sell like hotcakes. So they need to get on that and get that up on WWE Shop. So this was great. I loved it. I loved the guys that they're pushing now. Maybe it was a fluky thing, and in a month I'll look stupid, and a lot of these guys are not going to be, you know, booked as strongly. But I have faith that when it comes to Cesaro and The Shield and guys like that going forward, we're going to see these guys featured a lot more prominently, a lot more strongly in the main event picture. And it sets up a lot of possibilities in terms of matches, not just for the next pay-per-view, but over the next 6 months or so. You know, you can go with Shield against Evolution. People have written into me, do you think they're going to do War Games? I don't think they're going to do War. They're not going to do War Games with two rings, that's for sure. Maybe they do War Games with one ring. I don't know that that would be as fun, but I don't see that happening. But you could do Shield and Evolution. You can do, again, if you want to build to Brian and Brock at SummerSlam with Brock winning the belt, you can do that. Between now and then, you can have Brian and Bray Wyatt. Once Bray gets done with Cena, so if, let's say, him and Cena have a rematch at Extreme Rules, I don't know why Bray Wyatt wouldn't win that match since he already lost the first one. He's got to win at some point. So let's say he gets that win over John Cena. Now you can transition Bray into a title feud with Daniel Bryan, because now he's beaten John Cena. He's beaten the champion at the Royal Rumble before Bryan won the belt. He's got a win over him, clean win. It would make sense for, and he's over too. It would make sense to have Bray challenge for the title at some point in the next few months. So you can do that, and maybe Bryan can get his win back. Yeah, I mean, hell, you could even build to Bryan and Cesaro. If they keep pushing Cesaro as strong as they have, and now he's got Heyman backing him up, I don't know how you reconcile that, since, you know, Heyman's with Brock, and up until the point that The Undertaker came back, the only thing they wanted was a shot at the title. So I don't know how much sense it would make to have Heyman with Cesaro and have him kind of back Cesaro into a title match before Brock, but you can do it. You can build to Cesaro and Bryan. There's no doubt in my mind they would have a kick-ass match. So there's a lot of different possibilities here, and I like the fact they're bringing up a lot of new faces. It sucks for the guys on the roster right now, the Mizes and the Kofi Kingstons and people that are already on the main roster who they're not doing anything with, and now instead of pushing them, they're just going to bring in new guys. It sucks for them, but it's nice to have some fresh faces and some new blood. And I'm very excited to see what happens the next 2, 3, 4 months in the direction that they go in. They've got all the pieces in place. Now let's hope they don't screw it up. And if they don't, I think it could be a real fun summer. You know it's a long podcast when I'm 90 minutes in and I'm only first now getting to the NXT review, so I'm going to try to speed things up a little bit here. I did not see NXT the week before, which would have been, I think that would have been the day after I arrived in New Orleans. I didn't even go back and watch that show. I think there was a Corey Graves, Sami Zayn match, but I could be wrong. So if I'm missing anything, I apologize. This show had Rich Brennan making his debut as the new play-by-play announcer here, along with Alex Riley and Jason Albert. Brennan has only been with WWE for about a month. He did some announcing for Booker T's Reality of Wrestling promotion and also worked for NWA Houston, so he's got a little bit of experience with wrestling commentary. I guess maybe he's the new person they brought in to replace the spot that was left open when they got rid of Tony Dawson. Didn't hear enough of him on the show to really make a full judgment. He was okay, and we'll see going forward how he is. Adam Rose, who is now Raw bound, was in the opening match against Danny Burch. Not much to it. Adam Rose gets the win. Bayley beat Sasha Banks with her belly-to-Bayley suplex. We seem to be in something of a holding pattern with the women right now on NXT. It may even be more so now with Paige making her way up to the main roster. I would think that, again, they would have Paige vacate her women's title now that she's the Divas Champion, but that's just a guess. I mean, maybe they hold a tournament and bring a few new female faces up to NXT TV. When I attended Access, they had a match with Sasha and Alexa Bliss, who has not yet made her debut. She did look a little rough in that match, so maybe she's not ready, but they do need to get some new faces out there as quickly as possible. We had Mojo Rawley making short work of Sylvester Lefort. I met Mojo in New Orleans. Really nice guy, and totally living the gimmick. I saw him actually a few times running around to different bars on Bourbon Street, just full of energy. He definitely stays hyped. So that is the truth. After the match, who should come out but Brodus Clay, the main event player. He powerbombed Lefort, then he cut a promo on Adrian Neville. He is very jealous that Neville got the big rub back on the NXT Arrival special from guys like John Cena. And, you know, here he is. He's been here for years, and he gets no respect. Well, you know what, Brodus? When you start doing 450 splashes off the top rope, maybe you'll get the same props that Neville does. Neville came out to confront Brodus, who ended up backing off like all heels do, saying he'll handle him when he's ready. Well, that's not a match I'm looking forward to. Brodus Clay and Adrian Neville. Actually, I gotta say, I'm getting very worried with this influx of low-card, I can't even say mid-card, low-card WWE talent that seems to be flooding this show. We had, and Brodus Clay is not the first example of this. There's been other people who have popped up on this show before. The segment after this, we had the Great Khali. Of all the people to bring on NXT, the Great Khali is in a backstage segment with CJ Parker that set up a match between the two of them for next week's show. Think about that for a second. CJ Parker against the Great Khali. What did we do to deserve that? We must have done something really, really wrong to get that match on next week's show. That sounds awful. Awful. And to put CJ Parker in that, forget my feelings for the guy's character, to put that guy in that position, here's a developmental show where these guys are trying to learn, they're trying to get experience, and they want to go out there, you want them to look good and not fuck up and not look horrible, and you put the guy in the ring with the Great Khali, as though you can't possibly handicap the guy anymore, you put him in there with Khali, I almost feel sorry for the guy. We have Oliver Gray back. Oliver Gray is the former tag team partner, him and Adrian Neville were the champions way back when. He's been out forever. He had a knee surgery. I don't know if it was knee reconstruction. Obviously, whatever it was pretty major because I have not seen Oliver Gray myself. I mean, I've been watching NXT for almost a year now, and I have not seen Oliver Gray. So that tells you how long the guy's been out for. I know who he is. I'm just not really familiar with his work, so I can't tell you how good he is, how bad he is. I don't know. Camacho interrupted his promo wearing, I think he was wearing a suit, and he set up a match between the two of them for next week, so I'm interested to see Oliver in action. Camacho, not so much. Bo Dallas came out to occupy NXT. He called upon all of his Bo-leavers to swarm the ring, just like they did for Daniel Bryan many weeks ago on Raw, but not one person came down to the ring, and at that point, Bo Dallas had a complete meltdown. He was crying, screaming, he can't believe it, why are you doing this to me? I gave you cookies! I gave you cookies, he told these people. Ungrateful bastards they are. This brought out JBL, who, in case you forgot, because he never appears on this show, he is, in fact, the NXT general manager. Maybe making possibly his third appearance on this show. He said poor Bo didn't have enough people to occupy a seesaw. He said since Bo was dressed for competition, he had a certain someone from South Africa waiting for him. Turned out to be Justin Gabriel, yet another main roster jobber on NXT. They had a match, wasn't very good, which kind of surprised me because Justin Gabriel's very good. Bo Dallas is not bad, but I just didn't think this match really was any good. Dallas won with his double arm DDT, and they went off the air 10 minutes early, which I think is the new thing now on NXT. They go off the air early. I don't know if this was his swan song from NXT or not. I'm going to guess not, that we have not seen the last of Bo Dallas on this show. But he can't have too many more appearances left, given that his debut is impending very soon on the main roster, which is probably the best thing for him, to be perfectly honest with you, because without the title, there really isn't much else for him to do on the show anymore. I mean, what else? Yeah, he can come out and have meaningless matches against people like Justin Gabriel, but clearly they're not positioning him to challenge for the title. He had his rematch. He lost. So they're going to give Neville a few people like Brodus Clay to beat, I guess, before he faces somebody on the actual NXT roster. So what else is there for him to do? It makes sense that they would take him off NXT and just put him on the main shows, because there just is nothing left for him to do. He's done everything that he could possibly do on this show, and now he's going to sink or swim based on how well he gets over in front of the main audience. And I hope he gets over, because I like Bo Dallas. I am a Bo-liever. I am a fan of Bo Dallas, and I hope things work out for him. Before we move on to Impact, I want to do just a quick verbal plug here for Audible, which I did not mention at the beginning of the show. We've had so much stuff to cover this week, but you can sign up for the Audible service. Audible is a service that provides you with audiobooks for you to download and listen to on your way to work, school, at the gym, at home, when you're lounging out. There's thousands, hundreds of thousands of books, including some wrestling books to choose from. A lot of you guys have signed up over the last couple of months. I want to say thank you for that, and seemingly you have enjoyed your Audible trials, and some of you I know have stuck with it even beyond the 30 days. You can sign up free right now for 30 days. No cost to you. You go to audibletrial.com/Solomonster. That is the unique URL for this show if you want to support the Sound Off. Go to audibletrial.com/Solomonster. You can sign up for a free 30-day trial. You get one free audiobook that you can keep whether you stay with the service or not. And if you don't like the service for whatever reason, you can cancel within 30 days. You don't get billed. You get to keep your audiobook. And life goes on. No harm, no foul. But give it a shot. I think you guys are going to like it. audibletrial.com/Solomonster. And if you do sign up, write into me. I'm curious what audiobooks you guys are picking. Maybe I want to check out one of them. Maybe I haven't even checked if they have Catcher in the Rye in audio form. I haven't read that book since I was in school. Would love to hear the audio version of that. So audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Check it out, sign up, and show your support for the Sound Off. And with that, we move on to TNA. TNA was neglected on the last two shows that I did from New Orleans because, frankly, I did not have time to watch Impact last week. So I completely missed the show before WrestleMania. And watching this week's show, it didn't feel like I missed much, so I have not bothered to go back and watch that show. If I missed something important, I apologize, but I'm guessing I didn't. So this week, Delusional Dixie was back on Impact. Oh joy! All good things must come to an end, I suppose. I knew it wouldn't last. They opened the show with a 10-man Royal Rumble. They call it a gauntlet. It's a fucking Royal Rumble. To determine the number one contender to Magnus's world title at the Sacrifice pay-per-view on April 27th. No Samoa Joe. He's out dealing with a personal issue. Bobby Lashley was in here, got no reaction, was eliminated. Just like another guy, really. And it just shows you how screwed up these people's priorities are when they let AJ Styles go. Or Bad Influence, who seemingly has one foot out the door, both of them. They haven't been on TV in weeks. You know, I met Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian briefly, got a photo with them in New Orleans. They were there for WrestleMania, really nice guys. And I'm almost sorry I didn't bring it up to Daniels, just like, what's going on, dude? Like, are you in? Are you out? Because you would watch Impact for the last month, and you would never know that they were even employed there anymore. And they're probably the best tag team they got. They're one of the best acts in the entire company. And seemingly it's just not a priority to them to bring either one of them back. Or a guy like Chris Sabin, who I'm reading, it looks like Chris Sabin may be gone as well. Now, Chris Sabin's a guy that, he was a world champion at one point. It was really a joke, you know, as a world champion, one of the worst world champions of all time, based on how they booked him. So it's not like they've been doing much with him, but still, he's another one of those guys who is a TNA original. If he wasn't there from day one, he was there from those first couple of years. And I was a big fan of heel Chris Sabin. I thought babyface Chris Sabin was a joke. But as a heel, I thought he was awesome. And seemingly he may also be out the door. So all of these guys, a lot of them TNA originals, are just being let go, or they're choosing to leave because they want to cut their pay. Whatever the reason is, they're not making them a priority. But they bring a guy like Bobby Lashley back when the guy, I'm sure, doesn't come cheap. And he's meant nothing since his return. It's just amazing to me. Willow came out last here in this Royal Rumble. He was also the first one eliminated. That was funny. Came down to Abyss and Eric Young. And wouldn't you know, Eric Young won himself a title shot against Magnus. Not only did he win himself a title shot, he said he's not waiting for the pay-per-view. He wants his title match tonight. And MVP granted his request. Not only that, but he was also selling an arm injury going into this title match. If this story sounds familiar to you, just wait until the end of the show. Angelina Love won a Knockouts 4-Way to earn a shot at Madison Rayne's title, beating Gail Kim, ODB, and newcomer Brittany. Davey Richards has a new blonde hairdo, for those keeping track of that sort of thing. He and Eddie Edwards were called into a meeting backstage with MVP and the Bromans, only it was Jesse and DJ Zima. Robbie E., they said, his flight was canceled, so he couldn't make it. Even though Jesse had both tag team belts, couldn't really explain his way out of that one. MVP said if Robbie did not make it in time, Zima would have to take his spot because they would, in fact, be defending the titles tonight against the Wolves. Remember that one In Your House pay-per-view where Owen wasn't there and so Bulldog teamed with Yokozuna instead against Shawn and Diesel? Then Owen showed up at the end of the match and took the fall. Yeah, this reminded me of that. I don't know why. Just a random wrestling memory. Delusional Dixie came out to confront Babyface Ray. She demanded to know why he double-crossed her at Lockdown, seeing as she paid him a lot of money. See, I have a theory about this. Here's my theory on what happened. Dixie did pay Bully Ray a lot of money to screw over the Babyfaces at Lockdown, but when he tried to cash the check, it bounced, and Bully decided to turn on her. That's what I think happened, but Dixie won't admit it. Bully said the company didn't belong to her. It belongs to the fans. And Dixie did her best Stephanie McMahon impersonation. Slap Ray right across the face. Crowd wanted him to put her through a table. Bobby Roode jumped him from behind. Dixie told him to grab a table, which he did. Bully made a comeback, teased putting him through it instead. Roode managed to escape. And then, with the table already set up in the ring, he turned his attention to Dixie in the corner. Now the fans all of a sudden were really excited. You know, they wanted to see this woman put through a table in the worst way. So what do? They cut away to commercial. Then, to make it even worse, when they come back, we get a backstage segment with Magnus and Dixie Carter. No explanation about how this woman escaped certain death. Nothing. It was like that time on Raw when Vince and Stephanie were in the ring and the Shields music hit. And everyone's thinking, uh-oh, this is going to be awesome. They're going to get the crap beaten out of them by the Shield. What's going to happen? And then they cut to a commercial. And they came back, and Vince and Stephanie were nowhere to be found. That was stupid, and this was just as stupid. Short story here is that Dixie told Magnus, you're on your own in your title match with Eric Young later tonight. She said she was going to fly back home, she was going to have a few glasses of wine, and take a shower. I didn't need to know that, but that's what she said. The Wolves beat Jesse and DJ Zima by disqualification when Robbie magically appeared and he yanked the referee out of the ring when the Wolves were about to win the match. I guess his flight made it in after all. Can't believe how not special the Wolves feel already in this company. Can you believe that they've already been the TNA Tag Team Champions once before? Most people probably wouldn't even know they held the belts once at all, but they were. They were the Tag Team Champions for a cup of coffee, and then they lost. Meant nothing, but it did happen. It's too bad. Christy Hemme said she wanted to meet Sam Shaw in the ring to talk about commitment. I knew right away what that meant and where this was going, but apparently Sam Shaw is not the brightest bulb in the box because he came out, and once she had him in the ring, Christy started... Basically, what Christy Hemme was doing here was she was molesting this man with her hands. Seriously, she was... A huge cock tease in this segment. I was actually rooting for Sam Shaw. She asked him to close his eyes because she had a surprise for him, which turned out to be Ken Anderson arriving in a white van marked Psychiatric Services. It's a good thing Samoa Joe wasn't there. That van might have given him some bad flashbacks. Anderson came down, he laid out Shaw with the mic check, dragged him to the back, threw him in the back of the van, but Shaw managed to kick his way out somehow, and he escaped. So instead of chasing this psychotic maniac down, what does Mr. Anderson do? He does nothing. He stands there. He gives up. So now, This guy has endangered the lives of everybody in Orlando because he was too damn lazy to chase the guy down. Thanks a lot, douchebag. Up in the rafters, we have Willow. Willow did yet another one of his wacky Willow promos in what sounds to me like a British accent. Did you ever notice that? It sounds a lot to me like he's attempting to do a British accent. Not a very good one, mind you, but that's what it sounds like to me. Why would Willow be British? This I don't know. Maybe he was he British in Omega? Was that the gimmick? I have no idea. He challenged Rockstar Spud and EC3 to a handicap match next week. He ended the promo by telling them to be there or be, not square, triangular. What the fuck does that mean? Triangular? Is that some kind of an inside reference I'm not aware of? You mean to tell me they drive a van marked psychiatric services to the arena and try to commit Sam Shaw and not this guy? Sam Shaw, we've got to get him into a straitjacket, but we have Jeff Hardy, one of the biggest names in all of wrestling, running around dressed up like a giant moth, talking in a fake British accent and laughing at himself. And nobody thinks, hey, maybe we should try to get him into that van. It's completely ridiculous. TNA confirmed they are, in fact, coming to New York City June 25th, 26th, and 27th to the Grand Ballroom at the Manhattan Center for a series of Impact tapings. Three nights in a row in the same building. Good luck with that. That's going to be a tough sell. I'll probably be at one of the shows. I usually go to TNA when they come to Brooklyn. They usually do those baseball shows outside. I assume that this means there's no baseball in Coney Island this year. They've done that show for like 5 years in a row. I can't imagine they're going to come to New York City three straight nights and still come to Brooklyn, you know, a month later. So I'm just guessing that the baseball show here is no more. So if that's the case, I'll probably want to go to one of these shows. I can't see myself going to more than one of these shows unless they really mark down those tickets like big time. Like they're going to have to put super discounted tickets out there to get me to go more than that. I'll go to one, but more than that I think is a huge stretch. Especially since I doubt very seriously that they can mark those tickets down too much. They got to pay for those nights somehow. I can't see them paying all that money to book the building three nights in a row and then charging, you know, $15 a ticket. I can't imagine them doing that. And in the main event, Eric Young. Yes, that Eric Young, the same Eric Young who has been booked as a comedy character in the company for years, defeated Magnus to become the new TNA World Heavyweight Champion. He beat him with a pile driver, plays pop big for the title change. I don't think they were expecting it. I have a few thoughts on this. First, big congrats to Eric Young. He's a TNA original going back to the early days of that company. He's well-liked by everybody there. AJ Styles said as much in his High Spots shoot interview. You know, he said the guy's been through so much crap booking-wise. You know, AJ said it was amazing that he's still as over as he is with the audience, because by all rights, the way he's been booked, he shouldn't be over at all. But he is. He comes out, he gets a great reaction from the crowd, they chant his name, they chant EY, people are into him. People love him, and it was a genuine feel-good moment at the end of Impact. Aside from the fact that I still can't view him as anything but a comedy character, they didn't dedicate enough time to getting him away from that label. That aside, I don't mind this at all. You know, look, Magnus was booked as a pussy throughout his entire run with the title, which I'm sure is not over yet. It's not like he was a great champion. He was never booked like a great champion. Not once, not one day of that entire reign was he booked as a great champion. And let's be honest here, I don't know why people would be so upset over this. Realistically, it doesn't matter who the champion is in TNA. It really just, it doesn't matter at this point. So why not give the guy a shot? He's over. It's more than you can say for Magnus. He is over. It's and not just Magnus, but it's more than you can say for most other people on that roster, aside from Samoa Joe. I mean, if Jeff Hardy was over, he sure as shit ain't over anymore. Not with that stupid gimmick. So, I don't expect Eric Young to have very long with the title anyway. I expect this to be a deal like WCW did back in 97, when Lex Luger beat Hollywood Hogan on Nitro to win the title 6 days before their pay-per-view match, and then Hogan just won the belt back from him there. You know, EY's not holding this title for very long. But the other thing that stands out to me about this, and it's so obvious, and I don't want to get hate mail, okay, from all the TNA diehards about this, because you cannot convince me otherwise. There's already a whole thread on our Facebook group page about this, and I've chimed in there, and I'm going to say the same thing here that I said there. You are delusional if you don't think this wasn't a blatant copy of what we saw with Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania. The bearded underdog wrestles twice on the same show and wins the title 4 days after Bryan does the same thing. They clearly wanted to capitalize on all the hype for Bryan's big win last Sunday. And if that's what they want to do, that's fine. But they have to accept that nobody will ever look at them as anything but WWE light if they insist on ripping off the bigger company's main storyline the same week they're doing it. I mentioned before, right down to the arm injury after the first match heading into the main event. Carbon copy. And if TNA is fine with that, if TNA wants to be WWE light, then turn the lights off because the party's over. You'll notice, still no announcement from TNA or Spike TV about a renewal of their TV deal, which is up in October. You know, we're 6 months out now. T-minus 6 months. In the past, by now, we've already had the big press release. They don't wait very long to announce an extension or a renewal. We would know by now. I would say if another month goes by without hearing anything, I'd be very, very worried if I worked for TNA. Jeff Jarrett finally announced the name for his new promotion. He's calling it Global Force Wrestling. It sounds like a friggin' anime cartoon on Cartoon Network. But he's moving ahead with his new promotion. The one thing TNA can at least rest a little easy knowing is that they don't have to worry about Spike snatching them up because Jarrett has told people that that's the one place they're not allowed to go, is Spike TV. I would imagine it was part of whatever agreement when he split from TNA that he would not go to Spike. So at least they don't have to worry about that. But that doesn't mean Spike can't still drop them. I would be surprised if they did because Impact still gets decent numbers. They actually did a pretty good number this past week. I wonder if part of that was just this was a big wrestling week. I mean, we'll know next week, because if Impact did 1.4 million viewers this week, and next Thursday they're back down to 1, or 1.1, then we'll know. It was the WrestleMania bump. But they did a good number for this week. But without Spike, there is no TNA. So I'm happy for Eric Young, but for TNA, it just makes them look so bush league when they do stuff. Like, I mean, how do you do this and not know that people are going to watch this and go, oh, God, they're copying off WWE? I mean, WWE does the same thing. They'll copy shit from TNA, don't get me wrong. But don't throw that back in my face. Well, WWE does it. No shit, Sherlock. I'm not saying they don't. I'm just saying it's obvious they did that here. And as happy as I am for the guy, it just looks so minor league. All I'm asking for when I watch TNA is just something different. I got 3 hours of Raw every Monday night. I don't need 2 more hours of Raw on Thursdays. That's all I'm asking for. And maybe Eric Young, hey, maybe he'll have a nice little run for himself as the champion. But I am positive that the plan is not to keep the belt on him for more than a few weeks. A month? He goes past a month with the belt, I'd be stunned. But at the end of the day, it just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who the champion is in TNA. So why not give the guy a shot? He deserves it. He's worked hard. He's busted his ass. I hope he does well. And I hope they bring Austin Aries back at some point, because he's also fallen off the face of the earth, like a lot of these other guys. And I don't know what that means for his future. But I hope they get him back on TV soon, too, because he's up there with Bobby Roode and Bad Influence and those guys as the best part of watching TNA, and he hasn't been on TV in weeks either. I don't know what's going on over there. I don't know. Let's move on to the mailbag here. If you have questions, you can email them to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. We have a ton of audio questions this week, so many that I can't even get to all of them. So if I don't get to them this week, I'm hoping I get to them next week. Email your audio questions, your regular questions. If you do send an audio one MP3 format, please include the body of the question in your email, or I may not use it. And please include your name and where you are from. And let me just apologize right here off the bat. I am just not able to keep up with all the emails I got over the last 10 days or so. Especially once I left for New Orleans, it's not, you know, I have not been able to keep up with it. Just know that I do read everything I get. I do see it. I do read it. I just can't respond to all of it. I hope to over the next few weeks as I catch up on stuff, but please don't be offended if I don't respond back to you or if it takes me, you know, 3 weeks to get back to you. It's just, I just can't keep up with the volume of stuff I've gotten over the last few weeks, but I do see it. Quick shout out also to Incubus. He sent in an audio question last week and entered his horror movie script into the Screamcraft contest, which is being hosted by ShockTillYouDrop.com. And I love me some horror movies, so I hope he wins. So good luck to him there. We have an audio question to kick things off here from Halen from Kentucky.
Hey, Cell Monster, what's going on? My name's Halen. The Ultimate Warrior's unfortunate passing, which is still very shocking and surreal to me. I was curious as to which wrestler's death has affected you the most or evoked the most emotion out of you. Who had the biggest impact on you?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, a lot of them have just left me feeling really depressed and shitty. I mean, when Eddie died, that sucked. When Benoit died, more so for what he did, I mean, that was just awful. That's in a whole category by itself. I would still say Owen, though, because, and it's tough because Macho Man also was a tough one to swallow, and the way that whole thing went down and everything, and he had just rekindled a relationship with, like, an old girlfriend from when he was much younger, and they got married, and they were only married a year when he died. So that really sucked. But I still say Owen, just because I remember where I was when that happened. I remember feeling, you know, exactly how I felt. I had just met him, you know, less than a year earlier, and so that also played into it. And it was just, that whole thing was awful. Him having to do something that clearly he didn't want to do. He wasn't a guy that got mixed up with drugs and steroids and alcohol and all that BS, at least not that anybody knew of. And for things to happen the way that they happened and for him to die that way is just awful. It's just awful. So I still go with Owen Hart as far as that having the biggest impact on me. This next audio question here comes to us from Marcus from Wittenberg, Germany.
Hey, Solar Monster. Now that WrestleMania is behind us, I look back at the massive storyline we have been through with the WWE title. I just want your opinion if you see any chance that this whole Batista debacle at the Royal Rumble and so on could have gone another way if there was another wrestler in his place, besides, of course, Daniel Bryan. Let's do some fantasy booking and replace other stars with Batista. For example, Bill Goldberg. What do you think would have gone different if Goldberg was the man who won the Rumble and challenged Orton for the title at Mania?
That's a great question. I honestly think that Goldberg would have gotten the same treatment that Batista did. Maybe not that first night. I think that first night he would have gotten a lot of cheers, his first appearance in, you know, almost 10 years. But I think in the end, you know, you had a crowd that saw this guy, you know, in the storyline get screwed over so many times, and they respect him for, you know, being a good wrestler and all that kind of stuff. And I think anybody like a Goldberg in that position would have gotten the same treatment. As big of a star as Goldberg is, they still chant his name when Ryback is in there and all that kind of stuff. I still think that Goldberg would have gotten booed by a majority of the crowds. He might have fared a little bit better than Batista, but not much. I really don't think it would have been any different. I think there was this groundswell of support for this guy as the underdog, and short of, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin lacing up the boots and coming back. See, a guy like Austin, I think that'd be different. He would still, you know, you still have fans upset that Bryan's, quote, getting screwed. But, you know, a guy like Austin, that might be a little bit different. But Goldberg, I don't see as being on that same level. I think people would have looked at this guy after the first night and after the first nice little ovation he would have gotten, and they would have said, you know what, this sucks, because here's this guy, this old guy, coming out of retirement, being shoved into a title match, he doesn't deserve it, it's not fair to Bryan, it's not fair to all these other guys, and I think the crowd would have ended up crapping all over him. You know, they certainly didn't have a problem crapping all over him at WrestleMania 20. This next audio question comes to us from Mario over in Egypt.
Hey there, Solid Monster, this is Mario Samir, all the way from Egypt. First, I want to let you know that I'm a huge fan of the show. I got a tough question for you. When did the WWE realize that The Undertaker has a streak at WrestleMania and started to acknowledge it and, you know, turn it into a gimmick? I'm sure it wasn't a long-term plan. Also, since the streak is over, can you list 5 potential candidates that could have or should have ended it?
I don't know exactly when WWE realized it. I know the first time that I remember them acknowledging it on television was WrestleMania 17, when Undertaker beat Triple H. I remember Jim Ross on commentary after the match acknowledging that he was now 9-0. And that was the first time I remember them throwing a stat like that out there. So I think that would have been the first time, and probably from that point on, it just became this thing where, okay, he's undefeated, and it just became bigger and bigger and bigger every single year. As far as potential candidates who should have ended it, look, I was one of the people who didn't think the streak should end. And if I were in charge of things, I certainly would not have booked anybody to beat the streak. But if I had to, if it had to come to an end, I like the idea. You know, I pitched an idea for a match. This was many months ago when there were rumors that maybe The Shield was going to work with The Undertaker. Because if you remember, the last time we saw Undertaker on television, he was laid out by The Shield. He had a match on SmackDown with Dean Ambrose, a rare singles match on television. And they beat him down, they put him through the announce table, they injured him. He got legitimately injured on that spot. We never saw him again. So it would have made sense for him to come back seeking revenge on The Shield, even though now they're more baby faces. Back then they were heels. I like the idea, if the streak had to be broken, you want to go with guys who, I guess, can get, you know, they can get a rub, whatever you want to call it. But guys who are going to be long-term important to WWE, guys who have big futures ahead of them, can be big stars, could be made, pushed up to that next level from something like that. The Shield, all three of them, I think, would be those guys, and in particular, Roman Reigns. So I would have done a gauntlet-style match where Undertaker is seeking revenge. He wants to do it on his own. It's a gauntlet style, so it starts out, let's say, with Undertaker against Seth Rollins. He gets past Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose is up next. Or you can reverse the order. You want Ambrose first, Rollins second, whatever. And each time it's becoming increasingly more difficult for Undertaker to get the upper hand, to try to win. But he does. He manages to win both matches. And finally, it comes down to Roman Reigns. He's now got to wrestle a third time. Out comes Reigns, or maybe Reigns is already out there. Undertaker now has been beaten down those first two matches. And you can have like a quick fall where Reigns immediately comes in and spears him, but only gets a near fall to pop the crowd or whatever. It goes on for a few minutes. But that last match can resemble, in a lot of ways, the match that Undertaker had with Brock. And that Undertaker in this match, whether it was intended this way or if he really just doesn't have it anymore, he looked like a beaten man. He couldn't do much. He was moving very slowly. He looked like he was in pain. And it kind of goes along like that until finally, and I don't care if it takes one spear, two spears, three spears, whatever. He gets, let's say, that third and final spear, and then Roman Reigns is the one who actually pins The Undertaker. So, in a way, the entire Shield can get credit for beating him, but Reigns is the one, since I think he's the one probably with the biggest upside, who they see as having the biggest potential as like a singles babyface, I would imagine. He gets the most rub out of it, but all three guys get credit for ending the streak. And I can't think of three better guys right now on the roster to get that kind of rub than The Shield. So if I was going to give it to anybody, I would have given it to them. Otherwise, I wouldn't have ended it at all. I think it should have just been kept intact. Luis from Los Angeles also has an audio question for us.
Luis from Los Angeles, California, and I wanted to ask if the Divas get tested for any type of drugs by WWE.
I believe so. I don't recall reading anything in the wellness policy on their website that would exclude the Divas. I think all the talent and all the Divas are all pretty much under the same umbrella. It may be different for somebody like a Triple H, who is only a part-time talent, and technically he would be considered an executive or an employee of the company. But yeah, I mean, the Divas are supposed to be tested the same just like all the male talent is. So I don't think there's any real difference between the two. Now, maybe they're tested for a different set of drugs, perhaps. That's possible. But my understanding is that they are tested. Alex from Vancouver, during your post-WrestleMania sound-off, I noticed how you said if there was a WWE Mount Rushmore, that John Cena would be on it or certainly should be. You held him to the same standard as Bruno, Hogan, Stone Cold, and The Rock. My issue is that with those legends garnering amazing crowd reactions and love from the masses throughout the majority of their careers, Cena does not. He has never received the pops or love that they received, and even Daniel Bryan receives louder reactions than John Cena on a daily basis now. I think Cena is more of a Bret Hart or Shawn Michaels who carried WWE when there was no other major star around to do so. He is the number one guy because everyone else retired or quit. Ratings have never been amazing. Pay-per-view buys have only been great when The Rock has shown up to help. How can you honestly say he belongs in the company of those four other legends when he simply has been, as Triple H would say, a B-plus player for the last 10 years? I can say it with a straight face very easily, because I'm not comparing John Cena to Bruno Sammartino. I'm not comparing John Cena to Hulk Hogan or Stone Cold Steve Austin. What I'm saying is that those guys were the most important guys to the company in their respective era. Without Bruno, WWF would not have done as well in the 60s, the 70s, without him on top drawing when he was as the champion. That's a fact. If WWE didn't have Hulk Hogan at the right time in the mid-80s, would they have had the same success with somebody else? I mean, who's to say, but probably not. He hit big at just the right time and took off from there. And Hogan was hugely important to WWE. And there are wrestlers who worked back then, the Killer Bees, guys like that, who have done interviews who have said, you know, it was awesome. We love working on the same card with Hogan. Because if you worked on the same house show loop and on the same card with Hogan, you knew you were going to get a big payday that night. That's how important he was to business and merchandise and pay-per-views and all that kind of stuff. Austin was the catalyst for the Attitude Era. Now, they were very lucky because it just so happened that at the same time Austin got big, they happened to have another big star that they made in The Rock, and they had a nice supporting cast of guys like Triple H, Mankind, Undertaker, Kane. I don't think we'll ever have another era with that many big stars and top-name talent coming together at the same time. It was this perfect storm. But without Austin, there is no Attitude Era. You think they're setting records and selling out buildings and doing as well as they did without Austin? Of course not. He was very important to them at that time, in that era. John Cena's the same way. Maybe John Cena doesn't have the same drawing power that Austin and Hogan had. But Cena is the guy for this era. He's been the guy for 10 years. He's still the guy. I know Bryan has the belts, but Cena's still the guy. He's the guy who, when they, you know, have the live events, is drawing the bigger crowds. It's a fact. Maybe that'll change now that Bryan is positioned as the champion. But when they would have house shows that were split up and Bryan and Punk, let's say, were on one crew and Cena and Orton were on the other, the Cena shows were outdrawing the Punk and Bryan shows. That is a fact. Cena still sells more merchandise than anybody else in the company. That is a fact. If Cena disappears for a while and then comes back, even if it's just a few months, you know, at least for that one show, the ratings for that Raw or the buy rate for that pay-per-view like Hell in a Cell last year goes up, and you can trace it back to John Cena. So I'm not trying to say that he's as good or better than any of those guys. What I'm saying is when I think of Mount Rushmore, if I had to pick four guys or five guys, I'm picking guys who were the biggest stars, who were the most important to the company in their respective era. Bruno was that, Hogan was that, Austin was that, and Cena is that. Without Cena, you take Cena away, they've done a piss-poor job over the last 10 years of promoting other guys to that same level. They're in a lot of trouble. And so that's why he belongs on there. That is a fact. And that's why, you know, I don't have a problem saying that John Cena belongs in the same company as those guys. If I made a list of who I think is better, he'd probably be at the bottom of that list, but that's not what I'm trying to say. Hopefully that clarifies that for you. Michael from Austria, should NXT create a mid-card title for guys like CJ Parker, Tyler Breeze, and even Mason Ryan to hold? No. No, 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 no. Cliff writes in, if Vince McMahon had not become Mr. McMahon at the end of 1997, would he have continued as the lead announcer for the broadcast team, or was he planning on leaving the booth anyway? I think he was planning on leaving anyway. I think he wanted to get out of the booth and back to doing stuff behind the scenes. So maybe he would have stuck around as lead announcer a little bit longer, but I think in the end he would have transitioned out of it and Jim Ross would have become the lead play-by-play guy no matter what. I think it happened a little bit quicker because of what happened in Montreal, but I think that was the direction they were going in anyway. Lastly here, Mike from Fairfield, Connecticut. I was watching WrestleMania 9 and enjoying the toga party. The Hart vs. Yokozuna match is coming up next when Hulk Hogan appears with Mean Gene Okerlund in a backstage interview to issue a challenge to the winner of the title match. During the interview, Hogan says, "It doesn't matter if it's you, Bret Hart, or the Jap." Hogan literally calls Yokozuna a racial slur on the program. I almost did a spit take as I never remembered this from previous viewings. Was this edited out of previous home video releases? Do you know if there was any backlash on Hogan for the comment? I never heard anything about it. I remember it. Now that you bring it up, I do remember that comment and being kind of surprised that he said it, but I don't ever remember hearing about him being fined or punished or anything like that. You have to understand something. I'm not condoning it, but I was stunned. I was stunned the first time that I saw there was a Madison Square Garden house show that aired on TV here. It might have been that MSG Classic show they were doing a few years ago. And there was a Piper's Pit in the ring with Roddy Piper, and his guest was Bruno Sammartino. It was a great segment. Bruno went after him at the end of it, but Piper made a comment where he called Bruno like a dumb wop or something like that. I mean, I couldn't believe it when I heard that. And I don't even think they edited it. Called him a dumb wop, and that was it. That set Bruno off. He went off on him. It was a different time, man. It was just a different time. You can get away with stuff like that. It wasn't his PC, or people just, you know, it wasn't, you didn't have the internet back then, so had that happened today, I mean, forget about it. The guy would have been roasted over an open flame. But you didn't have the kind of access that people had back then, so maybe people just didn't hear it unless they were in the building at Madison Square Garden. And you know, it was just a different time where you can get away with stuff like that. It was more commonplace. People threw words around like that, like it didn't mean anything. Everything now is a lot more politically correct, and people get offended if you say the wrong. I mean, if you look at somebody the wrong way, they get offended. And so the comment that Hogan made, yeah, it is kind of shocking when you watch it back. But, you know, I'm guessing that back then in wrestling, I'm not even saying in society, because society has evolved a lot quicker than wrestling has evolved. WWE had characters, very stereotypical characters, whether it was, you know, black people, Asian people. I mean, every stereotype you can imagine, well into the 90s. I mean, they still do it today. It's not as bad as it used to be. I don't think we're going to have, you know, Slickster walking around eating fried chicken out of a bucket like they did back in the day. But it was just a different time. So, no, I don't think Hogan, you know, got reprimanded for it. If he did, it was probably just a quiet thing. But it is kind of shocking to go back and watch stuff like that. History has been made here! This week in wrestling history, it was 20 years ago this week. Today, in fact, April 13, 1994, Jesse Ventura was awarded over $800,000 in royalties by a Minnesota court stemming from a lawsuit he filed against the WWF. He had argued that he was not compensated for the use of his likeness in several Coliseum home video releases when others like Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant were paid. This really was a landmark victory in a lot of ways because it paved the way for WWE to more clearly define who gets paid royalties and for what whenever their likeness is used. Lots of wrestlers today owe a debt of gratitude, I think, to Ventura for what he did here and for winning this case, because these guys make a lot of their money now off royalties paid on things like DVDs and video games. And this also explains why a lot of video releases that came out for years after this had Ventura's commentary muted so that they wouldn't have to pay him any royalties. That's how petty they were. 17 years ago this week, on April 13, 1997, ECW held its first ever pay-per-view event, Barely Legal, at the ECW Arena. This was a big, big deal for them. They went through a lot of shit to get this pay-per-view on the air. A lot of false start and stop dates. There was the whole mass transit controversy. I think it was up in Massachusetts, which almost derailed the entire thing and got them kicked off TV, among other things. Vince McMahon even allowed Paul Heyman to promote the pay-per-view on Raw a couple of times. This was back when they were doing their little crossover invasion angle. Taz beat Sabu when Sabu passed out of the Taz Mission, and Terry Funk won a three-way dance against the Sandman and Stevie Richards to earn an ECW title match right then and there against the champion Raven, which he won with a roll-up. And that was Terry Funk's second run with the belt. Speaking of ECW, it was 14 years ago this week, on April 13, 2000, that one of the most bizarre matches in wrestling history took place, where a WWE contracted wrestler, that being Taz, beat a WCW contracted wrestler, Mike Awesome, to win the ECW heavyweight title at an ECW show. Now think about that for a second. We're never going to see anything like that ever again. But this really happened. Mike Awesome jumped from ECW to WCW without dropping the belt, and he had a ton of heat for doing so. So much so that Joey Styles on commentary for his match against, I think it was Masato Tanaka at that first one-night stand pay-per-view when they did the big reunion, Styles was on commentary basically saying he wished the man dead, which I'm sure he regrets now. What Styles did not mention, or maybe he just didn't know, is that Awesome, like a lot of other guys in ECW back in the day, was owed a lot of money by Paul Heyman. And wanted that money up front before he agreed to re-sign with the company, because he was going to stay with ECW. But he had all this money that was owed to him, wasn't getting it, wasn't getting any answers. And so he, when it became clear that the money wasn't going to be coming to him, he went and signed with WCW. Should he have dropped the title first? Yeah, probably. But the dude wasn't being paid. You know, what do you want from the guy? So this grand plan was hatched between WWE and ECW. I think ECW went to them asking for a favor. And they came to an agreement to get the title off Mike Awesome. And the match was made between Taz and Awesome. So I'm sure Awesome feared for his safety because he came to the building, didn't even go to the locker room. He was probably very afraid to be back there because you had a lot of angry wrestlers who were still pissed off at him and probably wanted to have a face-to-face with Mike Awesome, and he wasn't interested in that. So he got to the building, came right through the crowd for the match, and after he lost, he left the exact same way, right back out through the crowd, out of the building. He was escorted out by WCW's head of security, Doug Dillinger. Taz became a two-time ECW champion, even though he was under contract to WWE. He ended up losing the title a short time later. But not before WWE, couldn't help themselves, aired a match on SmackDown pitting the ECW champion Taz against the WWE champion Triple H, and had Triple H beat him in the middle of the ring. And years later, it may have been on that Rise and Fall of ECW DVD, I haven't watched that in years, but Vince McMahon was asked about this, and when he was asked, why did you do that, why did you book that match with that finish, Vince said he had no idea why. He didn't know. I think we all know why, but he claims, yeah, probably could have done it a different way. Finally, 3 years ago this week, on April 11, 2011, Edge, at the time the reigning world heavyweight champion in WWE, coming off a win at WrestleMania over Alberto Del Rio, announced on Raw that due to tests that were done showing that his neck injury was far more severe than originally thought. He had spinal stenosis, which is a narrowing of the spinal column, and he was warned that one more match, one more move, spear, one bad bump, you could be paralyzed, you could die. That's how serious this is. At that point, WWE doctors are a lot more strict these days when it comes to their wellness policy, and you'll notice when a guy gets concussed, they're out of action, and they'll keep those guys out until they're ready to go. And they have to pass their impact testing, and they won't let them back. That's not how it used to be back in the day. I mean, you had guys, I mean, God only knows how many concussions some of those ECW guys alone suffered without even knowing it. Things are a lot more strict now, and the doctor said, that's it, we're not clearing you. It wasn't even, you know, we interviewed Edge in Miami as part of WrestleMania weekend 2 years ago, right before he was inducted into the Hall of Fame. And we asked him that question. And he, you know, he said, listen, it wasn't my decision. If I can come back, do one more match, it wasn't my call to make. You know, he even joked, he said, what am I going to do? I'm going to, you know, run out of the crowd wearing a mask or something and spear somebody or take a bump? He goes, it was their call. They're not going to let me wrestle again. And I remember watching this on TV, and it's just because I've been so desensitized to angles like this before and retirement speeches and stuff. And like the one Mark Henry gave last year, I thought was awesome. It turned out to be a whole ruse, but I thought the way that was done was great. But I remember watching Edge's speech and thinking, okay, this is probably an angle. Where is this going? And it took me a while. It took me until the very end of the segment to realize, like, holy shit, this guy really did just retire. And then it sunk in, and I think even in the arena, I would imagine people felt the same way, but by the end, they were giving him a standing ovation because they realized that this is real. This is really happening. This guy is done. And You know, what a way to go out, though. World heavyweight champion, just won your final match at WrestleMania. I mean, you can't script a better ending than that. So that was it for Edge. You know, he has not wrestled the match since. He's made sporadic appearances here and there. He's not under contract to WWE. He's making convention appearances, doing his own thing. He has a recurring role on that sci-fi show Haven. So he seems to be, you know, he seems to be doing well for himself. And he went into the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago. I think the youngest member of the Hall of Fame. You know, a sad way to end his career. But like I said, in other ways, you can't script a better ending. If you had to go out, you know, he certainly went out on top. Before we end here, I want to give a quick plug to one of our good friends, Antoine Moore. Has his own podcast, the More to Life podcast. I've appeared on there before. He did an interview with the Mouth of the South, WWE Hall of Famer Jimmy Hart, face-to-face, an in-person interview down in Florida, and has part one of that interview up right now on YouTube. I checked it out yesterday. Very cool stuff. So if you want to search for it, just type in Hanging with the Legends Jimmy Hart on YouTube. It'll be the first thing that comes up. Or you can check my Twitter. I just retweeted a link to it. So show your support. Check out the interview. It's pretty cool stuff. Keep sending me your questions. I apologize. Again, I am very backlogged. I may not be able to respond to all of you, but I do read everything. And you never know if your question may be plucked out to use here on the Sound Off. So thesolemonster@gmail.com is the place to send any and all correspondence. Thank you to everybody who has helped me break through. I mean, not only did we pass 5,000 followers on Twitter before WrestleMania, which was my goal, we blew past it. And we're well over 5,100 now. So if you're not following me on Twitter, please follow along at Solomonster. We're all over Facebook as well. I have my WrestleMania 30 photo album up on my profile page. But we also have a private group on Facebook that is growing each and every day, closing in now on 2,000 members. So feel free to apply for membership there, and I will approve you. And we have our own YouTube channel. We have a whole bunch of videos up there. I hope to get some fresh stuff soon. I don't know when, but hopefully very soon. But if you search Solomonster Sounds Off, you'll see the channel come up. You can subscribe to us there. Keep streaming us in Stitcher. We're moving up the ranks there. Every time you stream the show, it gives us a little bit of a boost. So even if you already listened to this week's show, listen to it again. It's easy for me to say. This show is 2 hours and 20 minutes. This is a monster show this week. And we had a lot to get to, a lot to cover, post-WrestleMania stuff. Now that's all done and over with. This tends to be a period where it could go either way with WWE now that the hysteria for WrestleMania is over. I really am very excited about the directions they're going in with certain things coming out of Raw last Monday. I hope I don't look like a fool for saying that a month from now. But I am excited to see where they go from here. And they're pushing new faces. They're bringing up some new faces. All of that is very cool. We'll have the Warrior tribute on Raw this Monday. Don't forget they're putting a special together that airs next Wednesday on the WWE Network. And judging by some of the other things they've done, including that Daniel Bryan special, I think if you're not subscribed to the network, you're missing out on some pretty cool stuff. If you're an international listener and you can't get the network, obviously you can't get the network. I mean, it's not your fault. But I do think based on a lot of the content, I've watched some of the countdown shows they've had. They have a new one up, Most Infamous Gimmicks. It's actually pretty good stuff they've got up there. So I would check that out if you haven't given them a chance yet. And I think that about wraps it up. So thank you to everybody who has supported the show over the last couple of weeks, the shows we did in New Orleans. This week's show will be back with episode 324 next weekend. Please make a PayPal donation if you can on thesolemonster.com. And we will be right back here next week. Until then, be well, stay safe. As I play us out to our new outro, courtesy of Noah Mark. See you next week.
You've been listening to the Solomonster Sounds Off, giving you the good.
I beat the authority, and right now I stand here as the new WWE World Heavyweight Champion!
The bad.
Brock Lesnar into the cover, hooks the leg, the streak is over.
And the ugly.
Well, we are here with the new married couple.
Now we're tag team partners for life.
Sean and Marty said the same thing once upon a time.
Oh, I knew he was going to do that.
What a despicable act that was.
Oh, my God.
Well, mostly the good.
Solomonster Sounds Off.
Since 2007 on thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes.
Solomonster Sound Off.